of your hats.
Our Heavenly Father, it was June 28, 1787, that Governor Benjamin Franklin of Pennsylvania hosted the 55 delegates in Philadelphia to the Constitutional Convention. He said, "I have lived a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. For without God's concurring aid, we shall succeed in building this republic no better than the builders of Babel. I therefore move that henceforth prayers, imploring the assistance of heaven and heaven's blessings on our deliberation, be held in this assembly every morning before we proceed to business, and that one or more of the clergy of this city be requested to officiate in this service." James Madison concurred, and such a resolution was passed. And from that day in 1787 until today, 2004, for the past 217 years, prayers have opened both houses of Congress in the United States Senate as well as in the United States House of Representatives. And it is in this spirit that we pray this invocation tonight. We are grateful for the privilege to gather publicly in this Grover Beach City Council meeting. We have freely elected our mayor and her colleagues to our City Council. And in obedience to Holy Scripture, we support them and undergird them and their support staff with our prayers. We pray for each of them publicly tonight, as we have already prayed for each of them daily by name in our personal prayers today. We are reminded again that good government is not the idea that's generated in the heart of people, but good government is a principle that originates in the heart of God. So give to each of our council persons tonight your divine wisdom to make good decisions, and may each decision honor God and be for the betterment of all the citizens of Grover Beach and all the guests who visit our beautiful city. We thank you for hearing our prayer. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. We will now have our flag salute. And doing our flag salute tonight is Priti Kaur. Would you please come forward? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Priti, please come forward. Priti is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. She is in a band and an honor roll student, a great friend, and an overall great citizen. We have this little certificate of appreciation for you and some goodies. Thank you. Thank you so much. May we have roll call, please?
Here.
Here.
Here. Closed session announcements. On Monday, March 5th, 2004, after meeting in closed session regarding conference with legal counsel pending litigation, Diamond versus the City of Grover Beach, the council reconvened into public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the City Council meeting was adjourned. On Monday, March 29th, after meeting in closed session regarding conference with real property negotiators, a portion of APN 060-242-034, specifically PM 6-93. The council reconvened into public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the City Council meeting was adjourned. Moving on to ceremonial calendar. proclamation declaring April 2004 as Month of the Child. Recreation Pector, would you please come forward?
Will the instructors and the students of the piano and cheerleading program please come forward? I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce two of our youth programs, beginning piano and also our cheerleading program. We're very fortunate to have two excellent instructors, Ms. Paulette Whiteman and also Ms. Barbara Daniels. We are celebrating April as Month of the Young Child. This is celebrated annually every year, and it's our opportunity to show off a couple of our programs. So we're going to give you a short presentation, and also the mayor is going to read a proclamation regarding the day and the month.
From the City of Grover Beach, the proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council designating the month of April 2004 as Month of the Child. Whereas Saturday, April 10th, 2004 is commemorated as the 26th annual Day of the Child. The month of April is recognized as Month of the Child, a time to emphasize and the children's opportunities are our responsibility. And we continue on. And to ensure that every child experiences the type of early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that all will promote children's early learning. And whereas the San Luis Obispo County, that there are approximately 24,500 children under the age of 13 years of age who have working parents and who need quality care, and approximately 8,270 licensed child care spaces. And whereas quality child care is necessary for working parents to be productive and happy employees, and the quality of youth programs are essential for older children during the out-of-school hours, whether or not their parents work outside of the home. Whereas the City of Grover Beach recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for the child to learn, and that in the early years may determine whether the child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need at least one caring and loving adult in their lives. And whereas the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council and the Children's Services Networks Community Partnership Committee and the EOC Child Care Resource Connection work cooperatively to coordinate events and activities for the day and the month of the child, and to acknowledge quality youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff. And whereas all citizens are encouraged to ensure that all children, youth, families have the opportunity and support to thrive and to help young people make positive choices to avoid high-risk behaviors, and that all citizens are encouraged to have patience with children and to allow them to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Grover Beach that April 2004 is hereby proclaimed Month of the Child.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce our students here this evening. We're going to do the piano students first, and then we'll go into the cheerleaders. For the piano students, we have Michael Roberts. Jacob Berdar. Danny Williams. And David. And I'm not going to try and say his last name. Thank you. And our cheerleaders are Tiffany Davis, Abby Hickman, Marcella Radke, Brooke Holt, Alexandra Simuli, and Courtney Ray.
Go ahead and start with the students.
Okay. Michael.
Do you all realize how hard that is? How many months?
About 3 months,
folks. That's awesome. Wonderful. Thank you. Gentlemen, would you like some candy? Help yourself. Come on. There you go. For Led. Wonderful. Very nice. Do the girls eat candy? No. They watch your figures. Yes. There's a little one that wants candy. Come on. All for one and one for all. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Boy, folks, if that doesn't make you proud, remember when. Thank you so much. Yeah, can't remember. I can't move like that anymore. That's what the Month of the Child is all about, these young folks doing things for us. We'll have a break. Okay, we'll go on now to item two, presentation, completion of the first year of the curb marking program for all residents and businesses in the city. Mr. Gates, former mayor, council member.
I just want to know how he's going to top that.
Is that mic on, Gene? Is that mic on, your mic? Doesn't sound like it. We're having some technical difficulties, so just a minute. Hand mic? The hand mic right there, Gene, does that work? No.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, that does sound like me. Okay. Actually, I'm here to report the completion. You just said the first year. You just thought it was going to take more than one year.
Completion of the first year.
We got it all done in one year.
Wonderful.
And it was more difficult than we perhaps thought. But we had a great crew, and we got it all finished. And on the last day, the last number that we did, the crew that was there, We sat down, when we got all finished, we sat down on a curb, and we toasted with a little drink of paint thinner. On the rocks.
Do not try this at home.
Yeah.
This was on this was actually March the 23rd. This is the day that we finished it. It was a great effort on all of our members, but there's actually, I want to recognize at least three, well, I want to recognize them all, but there's three of them. They're not all here, but when I call your name, raise your hand, but you don't have to keep it up. Y'all might be here for an hour. We've got Pat Martin, and we've got Rose Lindgren. Those two are here. And then Cheryl Morgan was the third person. Those three people did every number in the city of Grover Beach, from Nacimiento all the way up the hill and all the way down the hill to Grand Avenue. And from all the way the east and west, just those three people. So I'd like you to give them a big hand in addition. Cheryl is not here, but anyhow, the other two are. There are some other people too that was painters, and I wanted to mention they're not here necessarily. But Kate Dooley, Della Anderson, Preston Wood, Dick Simpson is here. And then I did
a couple
of things once in a while. But it was, as we say, a difficult job. But if it isn't a challenge, we find out with the CATS program, it's not really any fun. So that was okay. The other thing is that... one of the reasons to let you know about this is I wanted to give some information to the public on what we're doing now. We still got all of our equipment, and we still will do any number that we missed. We will do any new house that comes in, but we're not going to do it one at a time, folks. When you call into the police department and leave your name and address and phone number, when we get 8 to 10 units that need the number, we will go out and spray away. Another misconception I understand is that some people that live in a large PUD system, we didn't do those and we never will. It isn't practical to write 15 numbers on the sidewalk. And same way with the business. If you've got an A, B, and a C, we don't have those numbers, and so we don't do that. And that's about it. I will try to answer any questions that anyone has.
I would just like to say that when Mr. Gates was on the council, he was so adamant about spray cans and gang graffiti. It's really a trip to see him
true.
With a spray can doing numbers, doing a good thing.
Yeah, that's it. That's just the difference between good and bad. You know?
That's right.
Okay. Any questions or anything? Anyhow, we still got about $30 in our paint fund, which was another wonderful thing. It was volunteer all the way, and we had plenty of people donating a very generous amount of money. So as I had said originally, it didn't cost the city anything. It didn't cost the police department anything. It didn't cost the residents anything. All it was just the money that was donated. And so we will probably be using that $30 in the next year or something. Not, we may have a party. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, Ms. Martin.
I don't get to keep this.
Jean.
Oh.
I just wanted to add that he said that the three of us did the north side of Grover, but he was very instrumental in doing the south side. I think he did most of them on the south side, along with Preston Wood.
Yeah, well.
And a few others did join in, but he was the one that did most of the work.
Thank you,
Pat. Thank you.
And to all of you ladies and gentlemen that did this for us, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay. Before we go on to public communications, I just would like to recognize our supervisor of the 3rd District, Ms. Peg Pinard.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to public communication. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on this agenda. Is there anyone out there who would like to speak? Please come forward and state your name and address, sir.
We still have some ringing in this.
Oh, okay.
You got it. Thank you.
Hello, Madam Mayor and City Council members. I'm David Stearns, and I'm the owner-operator of the card room down the street on 4th and Grand. And we're going on 7 years of business now. And I'm here tonight for two reasons. First, I wanted to comment on the security addition to the card room ordinance. And secondly, I'd like to...
Think that will come on the agenda. You can speak at that time if you're going to speak on that particular item.
Okay. And then there's one other thing that's not on the agenda I want to talk about. Anyway, I just want to say I wholeheartedly support that. That's why I'm here to talk about that. And the other reason is I wanted to suggest another change in the ordinance that I believe would be beneficial to the city as well as myself. What I'd like to do is ask the city to consider issuing a license for a third table. And right now we have times where we have up to 20 people waiting at certain times of the day. And basically what happens is they're already in the building, but the difference between having the third table and not is that now they're standing waiting to play. And they get frustrated and either go to Chumash or go home after they eat our complimentary food. And the state law has strict rules on the expansion. However, I believe that there's no problem in issuing a third table. And I believe that since we have to get together and change it anyway for the security issue, that I think it would be a good idea to look it over. Maybe have a committee to review the whole ordinance and see if there's other things that could be changed too. And if that's possible, I'd like to volunteer to be on the committee. And I believe that there's a way it could be very beneficial for the city as well as myself.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I think that would have to be agendized and brought up at a different time. Okay.
Hi, good evening. I am Peg Pinard, County Supervisor, and I'd like to just give you a little bit of an update of where we are at the county and let you know of one of our new programs actually able to be started even within our existing budget. As you know, and are probably beginning to adjust in your own budgets, there's going to be tremendous repercussions for local governments, both cities and counties, as a result of the fiscal crisis that was in Sacramento. The county is going to be having to cut back by $11 million. And that's no small amount when we talk about the amount of services our residents are used to receiving. However, there is some good news. We did initiate a new program recently that does affect Grover and all of the other cities throughout the county, but particularly down here because I've received a number of concerns from Grover residents regarding mosquito abatement. And we've been reading enough about West Nile virus and its impending coming on the scene here in California, and especially very much so we're concerned to get ahead of the game here on the Central Coast. So we've initiated the program with our Ag Department and our Environmental Health Department for a mosquito eradication, and we're doing it within the existing budget. Everybody's going to have to be doing stuff within and at a reduced rate in the existing budgets. But just so that people know to be able to call the county if they know of freestanding ponds, we have taken care of the ones out by Kmart and some of the ones out behind AJ Spurs. But if people know of any others, please let us know. And then also be attentive to taking care of any freestanding water in people's own backyards, jars, pots, things like that. Please empty them out, get rid of any freestanding water, and then with together, hopefully we can get ahead of this, which is an impending issue here for us in the Central Coast. So if you have any other questions, be happy to answer. Otherwise, it's great to see you.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to ask questions?
Yeah, and what about is it the federal government or the state that controls that water
area on Fort, just off the right of 4th Street?
It's part of an ongoing creek area, or is it a pond?
It's a large lake.
It's a large, yeah, it's the preserve, isn't it?
Yep.
Fishing game, State Department of Fish and Game is the ultimate authority of what we do in the
Will
large
you
pond.
Be involved in eradication of that area also?
Can be. So we need to know if that's an issue. I know there are some beaver ponds up on the creek that feeds into that, and that's certainly an area that's the area I'm referring to behind AJ's. Between that and the bridge, if you stand on the bridge right there, you look around and
all
it's
that runs
pretty
down
active.
Into that preserve.
Exactly. Yes. So that's one of the areas that we're trying to get a handle on.
Should I take action on that?
Not individually. I don't recommend that.
No, I mean, notify.
Call us. Yeah, let us know. I am aware of the one by the bridge because some of the mobile home residents there have made that an issue as well. Very concerned about the amount of mosquitoes generated from that area. But if there's more,
direct to the agricultural department. Or
give them a call, right? Okay. Or give my office a call,
okay.
Right? Sure.
Thank you. Who's responsible for all of the stuff in the state park? Is it the state park?
We need your name for the record, please, sir.
Tom Baker.
Yeah.
Well, this is where the interagency issues begin to come up. You've hit the nail on the head when we talk about something. Is it whose jurisdiction? I would certainly like that local areas can take care of it because you're going to be feeling the effects. So if it's an area that you have a concern, let us know, and I'll get in touch with the agencies that we need to, because it's a problem that doesn't wait. So we need to get that part straightened out. So if it's in state waters, give us a call. We've got to still take care of that.
There's just a lot of marshy area in that whole state park area.
That's right. So we're on it. We have it. It's on our agenda, our department, and so it's now a program that's up and going. And you have residents who have been asking about it, and they should know that the eradication program has already begun. We will not be doing any aerial spraying. That part was withheld because of health concerns from people. But the ability to use some kind of control in the water is something that we can do without affecting anybody outside of that.
I think this was brought up at the last meeting, and we were told they were getting ready to spray at that point. Mr. Ford had informed us, is that correct?
I think they did on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Mosquito fish.
Right.
Yeah.
For the mosquito
use
fish.
Of mosquito fish and
yeah.
Larvicide, things that will just affect the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
But we're getting serious about it. But we as a government agency, and as you well know, you can only do so much.
That's right.
There are mosquito breeding grounds in everybody's backyard with standing water in fountains or anything else that can collect after the rain. So if everybody does their part, I think we can do a good job here.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Was there a lady in the back that had a question?
Well, my name is Missy Stein, and I was just unclear. What is the substance that's used? Just so you're aware.
Yeah,
go to the microphone.
Thank you. There are agricultural department larvicides that are approved by the state for use only on mosquito eradication. And so those are the substances that are being used, nothing that's going to be airborne. That we were really clear about. And so if you need any more information is exactly what it is, let me get that to you. In fact, maybe I can send it here. Or give me your name and address, and I'll make sure you get it. Okay? That way there's no intermediary. I'll be happy to make sure you get it. Okay?
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else that wants to speak on anything that's not on the agenda? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Moving on to consent agenda. I would like to pull item 4 and 7. Does anyone else have anything?
No.
Can I have a motion, please?
Move approval of 3, 5, and 6.
Second.
Okay. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, item 4, I just want, for the record, I was not here. So let the record show I will not be voting on that one.
I also had an amendment to the minutes. In particular, I believe it was item 7, the architectural approval, application 03043, Mark Wendler, Kurt Berger, 243 North 3rd Street. And I had voted against the project. And I'd like the record to reflect that I had voted no due to the lack of a policy in how the city deals with roof decks. And I've been on the record to say that I won't approve any until we have a policy on the books that the Planning Commission can follow in reviewing these type of projects.
Since we only have one person left, do we have to wait till next meeting? Because how else can we vote?
You can vote on it.
Yeah,
you can vote on it. Okay.
I thought it said you voted no.
On item four? I can't vote on that. I wasn't here.
No.
It said I voted no, but it didn't. I would like the basis of my no vote to be in the official record.
Councilmember Schultz, Mayor Pro Tem, I'm sorry, is there a specific amendment that you have to the actual minutes? Because that's basically what we
Well, I would just like, you can decide where to put this, that Mayor Pro Tem Schultz voted no, and stating that he will not approve roof deck until we have an adopted policy on the books. So, I mean, you can put it, if you want to put it in the action, if you want to put it prior to the action, wherever you think's best.
Okay, so we need a voice vote on this one?
That is correct.
Okay,
so we need a of item four.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Councilmember Ekbom, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Schultz. Voice vote?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
It will be in the next, right? I wasn't going to push as amended, so it will be in the minutes for this meeting, correct?
It's my understanding that the amendment as stated will be included in the amended minutes that we're voting on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I wanted to pull item 7 because I want the appointments to the Grover Beautiful Committee to be able to be recognized. So, Ms. Spector, would you like to do the honors, please? And before we do that, we need to approve them.
Yes.
So, would somebody like to make a motion to approve the appointments to the Grover Beautiful Committee? I make a motion that...
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mayor Pro Tem.
I move approval of the recommendations for Grover Beautiful Committee.
I'll second.
Okay, a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholl, seconded by Councilmember Ekbom. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholl?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, Ms. Spector.
Mayor and City Council members, I'd like to introduce Missy Stein, our new committee member. She's here in the audience this evening. I also would like to recognize Michelle Knapp. However, she was unable to attend this evening, and we're very happy to have two new members with us. So thank you.
Excellent. I just want to say that the applicants were all wonderful. It was really hard this time to pick any two in particular. So, Missy, if you'd like to come up and say a word or two.
I told
and welcome
I
aboard.
And could you give your address for the record, please?
Well, I'm very excited to be involved in the committee. I think it's wonderful that it exists. I have enjoyed the activities that Grover Beautiful has put on in the past, and I'm excited to contribute to keeping them alive and improving. So thank you.
She had a lot of great ideas, so we're looking forward to your expertise.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to public hearings. 2004 Community Development Block Grant Program and recommendation for allocation to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Mr. Raper, I think it is.
Honorable Mayor, Council members, before the Community Development Director takes this item forward, I would just like to advise you that due to the fact that there's only three of you here, the item 8C would need to be continued to another meeting as we would not have a quorum to consider that item.
Okay. Did you hear that, Mr. Raper?
Yes, ma'am, and as also for the record, what we will do is continue for the next meeting for this full for the council's consideration, but for the Board of Supervisors' consideration, it would be considered unallocated funds, and during their mid-year adjustment, prior to mid-year adjustment, they will, whatever action the City Council takes on the YMCA, they will incorporate it in their funding program. Is that clear? Tomorrow, 2 o'clock, the board has to vote on their allocation. What we would be proposing is, and the county would propose that the $2,042 that had been tentatively scheduled for the YMCA will be considered unallocated funds from the City of Grover Beach at this point in time. And they will do a mid-year budget adjustment around October or November prior to the actual funds coming from the feds for reallocation back to the City of Grover Beach via whatever the City Council decides with that program.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, and I'm hesitating, and I'm trying to pick my words carefully because obviously 8C is the item in which I have a potential conflict because I've been offered and accepted a position on the board of the Y. That said, I'm concerned that Mr. Epier saying this is going to go to the board with no recommendation and that the number that's going to go forward is the one that's in this report, and it was not consistent with what we had approved preliminarily. So I know I'm treading on, I'm walking a fine line, mm-hmm. but I'd really like to know what precipitated the change.
I think that, again, as far as the as far as the actual process of what is going to be going to the Board of Supervisors for their consideration tomorrow, Community Director can, Development Director can detail that further. All three of you will be here deliberating on item 8A and 8C, which will explain how the allocation for those items was arrived at.
You mean 8B, right?
I'm sorry, 8A and 8B, that's correct. That may assist you in ascertaining the item on which you do have a potential conflict.
So it goes sometimes.
That doesn't answer my question, but I'm not going to push this issue because this is something that I and legal counsel need to discuss. Mm-hmm. Because
how much is it less? I mean, the funding was cut $3,000 or something.
I think all fundings was cut.
I know,
period.
But that's the difference, isn't it?
That's what the city attorney was alluding to,
right,
as part of the explanation.
Why not say that?
Yeah, we'll get in.
Okay.
If I just may get into 8A.
Okay, let's get into 8A.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor. Just as a recap, the City Council on November 17th, 2003, considered the applications and approved three resolutions, which was the preliminary allocation for the upcoming CDBG funds. At that time in November, we had anticipated that we would have had funds of $150,000 and $150,936. When we were notified as to the actual allocation, the funding was reduced to $148,548. Staff then looked at the allocations that we could reduce and made reductions in allocation. And as you can see, in terms of the table attached to this resolution, you'll see some minor adjustments associated with that previous allocation. The other item that has occurred prior to after November 17th was the city received program income. We received $92,881 in terms of loan payoffs. What staff has recommended to the City Council is that an additional $40,000 be incorporated as part of the City Hall upgrade. As you may recall, in the 03 cycle, the City Council set aside $51,000 for City Hall remodeling for ADA upgrades. In talking with representatives and architects, they felt an additional $40,000 would be needed in order to ensure that the project could be successfully funded. So we're making a recommendation of that. Additionally, the City Council, in terms of your goal setting, felt that code enforcement was a very high priority. This is a revenue resource where we can allocate this money for the improvement agency areas and for $52,881. And what that will do is provide a revenue and a funding resource to do proactive code enforcement within the community. That would be the $52,881, if the City Council approves that allocation, would be added to the $15,000 estimated for the 04 CDBG allocation. So that would give the code enforcement program $67,881 to really to do a proactive code enforcement program in the upcoming year. The other items that we previously talked about in November is that the city may use up to 20% of the total allocation for administration. What the City Council has allocated was $25,000 for administration of the CDBG programs, and that equates to about 17% of the allocation. In addition, the city can only allocate up to 15% of the total revenue for public services program. And the City Council has maximized that, and $22,282 has been allocated to the programs identified in the resolutions. What we have proposed as part of our presentation to the City Council is Exhibit A, which is representation of the administration of the CDBG program of $25,000. Capacity building, basically that is to help implement the housing element for affordable housing, which is $5,266. Code enforcement, as you note on the table, previously in November of 2003, we allocated $15,000 as part of our total CDBG allocation. With the program income, an additional $52,881 is proposed. Handicapped sidewalk ramps for the city of Grover Beach. In the November allocation, we had identified $54,500, and that has been reduced to $48,000. And again, that's because of the reduction of the income provided. Small Business Development Center was allocated $3,000. City Hall ADA upgrade, which is again part of the program income, is $40,000, has been added to this hearing tonight. And then handicap picnic tables, barbecues, and water fountains throughout the city of Grover Beach was $30,000. In terms of public services under this consideration, the Literacy Council had been targeted for $3,000. And then the City of Grover Beach Recreation Department, in terms of, scholarships, thank you, of $9,240, which gives a grand total for that area of $231,387. And so with that, if the City Council considers this this action, it will allocate that amount of money to recommend that to the Board of Supervisors, which the county staff may present to their board. And when they conduct their public hearing tomorrow at 2:00, these numbers could be rolled into their upcoming yearly allocation program. Now, if you have any questions, we can.
Is there any questions of staff?
I know we're not supposed to get into the details, but the $40,000 that we're talking about, City Hall ADA upgrades,
yes,
could you kind of enlighten me as to what is envisioned as part of that?
My understanding is the restrooms would be brought up to ADA compliance. The doors would be brought up to ADA compliance. The public counters would be brought up to ADA compliance.
You mean the entry doors?
The entry doors, yes, sir.
Okay.
And these counters out here?
Yes, at the Community Development Department.
With respect to the additional monies, it looks like you were talking about We received $92,881 in program income, and then staff is recommending that it be split $52,881 code enforcement and $40,000 for the ADA upgrades.
That's correct, yes.
I know this council had talked about code enforcement being a priority, or at least being on the list of goals. I'm not sure if they're priorities or if they're goals from our last meeting.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to recover.
They were very high, whatever.
Well, I'm just wondering how far along are we in this process, because someone had brought up issues of drainage and concerns along 14th Street. And so rather than taking all that money and putting it into code enforcement, because I understand we're talking about taking that over into the fire department,
mm-hmm.
Is there an opportunity to use monies in a different area?
Well, one of the challenges we have in order to use CDBG funding for drainage is that the beneficiaries have to primarily be low and moderate income folks in order to meet that national goal of the program. The council did establish the stormwater enterprise fund, and you do have a consultant working on establishing rates for the stormwater fund. You also have the city engineer working on the drainage master plan, and then also the issue that we raised during the goals of trying to identify ways to capture some of the runoff in order to recharge it so that we have more groundwater available to us, because we're nearing the maximum that we can use under the gentleman's agreement. So those things are all coming together to create an opportunity to not only deal with water quantity, but also with drainage and flood control. And our NPDES requirements also with regard to the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System. So CDBG is not necessarily the most attractive funding source in order to do that. It's not impossible. It's not out of the question. But it probably is not the most flexible funding source that the council would want to use to solve those kinds of problems.
And if I may, as we talked before, is our goal is to develop some long-range strategies for maximizing and utilizing CDBG funding.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the criteria that we would identify for this revenue stream is if the high priority is for infrastructure, then we have to be very careful on how choosing the areas that could be paid for the infrastructure. And it has to be, you have to show benefit to low and income families in a neighborhood. So that would mean documentation, a little bit more forethought. For using it for code enforcement, clearly it meets the national objective of eliminating blight and slum areas. And because of, just by the definition, and because it's in an improvement agency, a blight documentation has occurred through the adoption of the ordinances and creation of the improvement project areas. So it's a very clear connection that we can use those funds for that program.
Thank you for that answer. I guess I'm just going to say this because it's just who I am. I support.
Certainly present his concepts of code enforcement. And in order to be very proactive, if that is a high priority of the council, he has some excellent ideas, and it does take some resources.
Yeah, I think that would be great, because I know when we were originally talking about a code enforcement officer, we were envisioning this being under the PD,
right.
Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've seemed to have been going in a different direction, and so maybe Mr. Hamp could maybe enlighten us as to what his thought process is and what that department would look like.
Mm-hmm. Mayor, I don't know if I don't see the chief. Perhaps I could
okay.
fill in a little bit for Chief. This is the potential of killing two or three birds with one stone in that the council had as a high priority addressing long-term needs with regard to fire and emergency medical services, as well as code enforcement and elimination of blight and blighting influences. And that's exactly what code enforcement provided by a full-time fire department would provide. And so this would provide an option for the council to consider that. It sounded like at the first goal setting exercise last year and at the last council meeting where we did a report card on where we were, that there was considerable interest in pursuing or moving towards options that addressed proactive code enforcement as well as some of the issues with regard to emergency medical services and fire. And so this was intended to address that kind of direction that we thought we were hearing from the council.
Do either one of you, do you envision this being a long-term funding source for this staffing this position?
I think one of the primary issues with regard to elimination of blight is initiating, and particularly with the concept of proactive code enforcement, is that you have to go out and set a tone. And what we really want to do is to have a voluntary program. And to a large extent, it's just a question of notifying folks and telling them what kind of tools might be available to help them address the issues. The community development block grant funding in the redevelopment area, I think, is more of a short-term kind of get the program up and going and really get it established, and then the ongoing maintenance of that kind of a program really comes about as we are looking at longer-term solutions to staffing of fire and emergency medical services and long-term general fund resources to be able to fund those kind of things. And whether that comes about because of diversification of revenues and economic...
That's the way the mouse do play. And it seems like more and more the yard signs are back up on the poles. You know, when Josanne was there, you'd see her ripping them off and that. And then also we seem, it could be just me, but all of a sudden you see a lot of motorhomes parked on the streets. You see a lot of boats parked on the streets. It's just all of this is all just taken free gratis.
Lieutenant Thomas is here, and he can explain what
And
what
I know
happens.
He's on a limited time. No, not you, but I mean...
Am I really? I didn't know that.
3 minutes.
She's timing me.
3 minutes.
I just like to know, you know...
Madam Mayor, City Council members, the code enforcement officers primarily here 8 till noon, Monday through Friday, not, you know, accounting for his vacation or times off. I know you see a lot of yard sale signs. Our CATS program has basically been handling that, because if I sent the code enforcement officer out all day long between 4 hours that he had... That's an all-day job. It seems the faster you take them down, the faster they come up. The motorhome issue, because he's only here 20 hours a week, he primarily deals with the major issues that are time-consuming and try to get compliance. Those would be unsightly property, any type of issues like that, drug houses that we're trying to abate. The motorhome issue is left to patrol officers. If somebody calls a complaint in, then we will go out and deal with that ourselves, or proactive enforcement by the officers on the motorhomes if they happen to notice them. I personally have gone out and marked a few over the last few weeks and cited them, and that creates a problem, because then the motorhome owners come in and want to complain that they should be able to park their vehicles on the streets. So the code enforcement officer, to answer your question, works Monday through Friday, 8 to 12. He primarily deals with jobs that are too time-consuming for the officers to go out and follow up on or don't have the expertise to deal with. I could have him pull him yard sale signs, but that's all he'd be doing.
No. Well, that's good information to know. And it's not so much, you know, it seems like when people have recreational vehicles that they would also take into consideration where they're going to park them and so forth, but I know that a lot of them don't. But it seems
has
like...
Has not been my experience on that one.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for you officers that have to go out and inform them of such. But
right. And, you know, we are a beach community, obviously, and people come over for the weekends. They park their motorhomes on the streets. They run their stitching cords, their sewage dump-offs into the whatever. It's all violation of municipal code. We try to get compliance by voluntary means. However, over the last year, we have issued many citations, mm-hmm. Which then creates the phone calls that you folks get at home concerning the motorhome issues.
And I understand the little, small little tin boats, but we're getting the big boats now.
They're, yes. And as we work on it, the complaints come in, we tend to go out as patrol officers during the day shift and deal with those because the code enforcer is dealing with houses. I believe he had 280-plus open cases last year that we dealt with, off the top of my head, in the staff report. And a majority of those have been with getting compliance from the citizens. Some of them did not comply and citations were issued. But mostly we're trying to get voluntary compliance.
Yeah, because I know there's other things to be busy with and besides that. But I just wondered.
No problem.
Thank you, sir. Councilmember Eckbaum, do you have
any? Yes, sir. So this $98,000 that were some loan repayments from low-income housing that we loan to people to get them their first chance at a home ownership. We loaned it thinking when we get this repaid back, we'll recycle it back into an opportunity for somebody else to get home ownership possibilities. Instead of that, we're spending $40,000 of it to get some bathroom doors at City Hall and another $52,000 to fund an employee for the city. It just seems like a really poor choice of uses of our money. So I'm going to be voting against this whole item A here. So we'll see what you guys do about it. But
well, you may not wish to vote against the whole item A. What you may wish to do is to talk about the program income that we have identified in there. Because if you vote against the whole item A, it may put it in jeopardy of losing the $148,000 for the 04 cycle.
That's
the $92,000 is the program income. That you're
that's
talking.
Why I'm saying this now, because we can talk about this, because the issue is out there.
Yes, it is.
And this item A, Exhibit A or 8A, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the first vote is this entire spending program that you have there.
That's correct. And you as a city council can review each one of those items. And if you are unhappy or dissatisfied with the, for instance, the allocation of the $52,881 for code enforcement, you could take that out. And if you don't wish to, you may wish to just put it into low-income housing as a recommendation to the county. Mm-hmm. Or the $40,000 under the additional City Hall ADA upgrade, if you do not wish to allocate that part of the program income, you may certainly take action on that and put it into affordable housing for future expenditure. So,
or some property acquisition if it might come up here before long.
We have to be very careful on property acquisition in terms of how we acquire it and how we dispose of it. So what we were proposing here are some real simple, straightforward programs where they clearly meet the national objectives and are CDBG eligible. When you get into more complicated projects as storm drainage improvement or property acquisitions, it makes it a little bit more complex. And we don't, from my recommendation is wait until we have a comprehensive program where we can use the CDBG money for long term. And that way the city council can look at the various detailed programs that we may wish to use the CDBG funds to accomplish those long-range goals that we may wish to develop in the future. But right now, these are very straightforward. They meet the national objectives. They're very eligible for expenditure of funds, and we felt it was appropriate to make that recommendation to you as a city council.
Mayor, if I could direct the council's attention to the first column on Attachment 2 under affordable housing. There's an amount there of $213,000. That's the program income from last year that was reallocated for that regard to housing. again, this is a policy decision. All the things that are before you tonight are policy decision, and we're happy to try to carry out what your goals are. We proposed something that we thought was consistent with what we were hearing, and has a lot of different options, a lot of different moving parts, and there still is nearly $250,000 of CDBG funding available for affordable housing.
Has there been in the past, there's been a push on not carrying that money over for a number of years. I mean,
there remains that push to expend the money.
But is it in a three-year time period? Sometimes it's not possible to spend it 1 year. If you're trying to lump more of it together to make a major push on something. Mm-hmm.
I personally believe, and we have Tony Navarro in our audience tonight from San Luis Obispo County, and he's the CDBG program assistant guru or whatever. He's been a very good resource, and he could probably answer some of those questions. But from my point of view, if we do have a comprehensive program, how we want to use CDBG funds that achieve some long-range goals for the city, if we bank the money for 2 or 3 years and have other future income through CDBG allocations, then we probably allocate that money to achieve that goal. And as long as we look at expending the money quickly and efficiently and for meeting the national objectives, I think we'd be okay. But in terms of the time, length of time, I think Tony could be able to respond to your question. So if you'd like to hear from Mr. Navarro.
Sure, he drove all this way.
Yeah.
Why not?
He did. He said, I'll be here, Jake, to answer all the hard questions for you. I said, oh, great.
While he's coming up, Jake, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that we do need the doors, David, because people who are in chairs or walkers, it's very hard for them to maneuver without handicap. Yeah. So I think that is needed, but I agree with you on the other half of this.
Okay.
Yeah, the City Hall is the focal point for all the residents within the community. And any ADA kind of projects is assumed to meet the national objectives. And I have never heard of any ADA projects being disallowed by HUD. So, but anyway.
Where'd you go, Tony?
Good evening, Mayor Santos and council members and ladies and gentlemen. Tony Navarro, Department of Planning and Building, County San Luis Obispo. To answer the question about how long should we hold on to CDBG funds, you can, but it's not advisable at this time. A couple of years ago, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, where the funding comes from, sent a letter to the urban county, which consists of five cities, one of them being Grover Beach in the county, telling us that we need to spend down our funds quickly. There is a regulation that states that a jurisdiction or urban county cannot have more than 1.5 times their yearly administration or HUD is aggressively looking for funding, and they're taking money away from jurisdictions that are not compliant with this regulation. So we are eagerly trying to get everybody who has incurred costs to spend it down quickly and send us invoice so we can pay it. We need to be compliant with this regulation. We, being the urban county, used to bank our funding annually. For example, the Mentone project. That was the drainage project here in town. The city allocated several hundred thousand dollars over many years. The county did the same thing. Everybody's sort of guilty on this. We banked our money. We were severely out of compliance. But fortunately, we've been able to draw down those funds. And we're always at a point where we will be compliant by April 30th. So you don't want to hold on to funding for a project that is 2-3 years away, because that would seriously jeopardize funding for the entire urban county. So, you know, six jurisdictions will hurt, if you will. I don't know how much money HUD will take away.
they told us in their letter that 20% of what we're out of compliance by would be taken away. However, I don't know if that has changed, if the punishment is more severe, but our HUD reps in Los Angeles are concerned that we meet this regulatory compliance by April 30th, so we do not lose any funding. So,
well, sorry, I did give you a time frame. We can't spend any of our money before April 30th.
Well, there's a lot of people who are drawing down money, huh? So okay. There's possibilities here and there. But there are projects that are underway that have incurred costs. It's just a matter of submitting invoices, and we will draw down those funds from Washington, D.C.
But what you encourage us to do is spend that government money, really not in the best places, just spend it so we can get more later. I mean, some of these projects we need to save money to pool together, to partner with others, to make a major impact on things. But we can't do that because you want us to just dump it.
Well, you can blame me if you want. Okay, but
I'm using you as government. I mean, I don't
agree with
personal.
That.
Yes, no. The pressure is coming from Congress on this. They have identified the CDBG program as an ineffective program. And so HUD nationwide is trying to fix this problem, make Congress happy, spend down the money, because there are, I'm sure, billions of dollars nationwide that are sitting in Washington unspent for CDBG programs. So Congress likes to see their money spent in their district, and we want to see the money spent to benefit the low and moderate income people that the program was designed for.
If we were going to partner with a private developer for low-income housing, it would take a year or more to get some project going. I mean, that's not spending the money, but it's not sitting on it either. You're moving forward with a project. So I don't understand why that couldn't be counted as...
Well, that's one of the dilemmas we have with making recommendations. Yeah. We have to look at...
Any other questions of staff? Mr. Raper wants to know.
I'll hold off after hearing Republican comments.
Okay, is there anyone in the public that wants to speak on this item? Please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor Santos and gentlemen of the council. My name is Wanda McFarlane, and I'm the director of Caring Callers. And the reason I would like to speak to you this evening is I would like to have the council reconsider recommendations for allocations of some of the $92,000 that was over. And I understood that there was a 15% amount that could be used on social services in the communities. And I'm a program that looks at the seniors in our community. And they're the poor and medium income individuals. We visit the elderly in the community, change their lives, many of them, bring them new hope and bring them a reason to have some happiness in their life. We take them to grocery shopping, doctor's appointments, and a real need is growing in all the communities here. The over 80 population is one of the fastest growing communities that there is in the nation, actually, and so therefore also in our community. So I would just like to have you reevaluate and maybe reconsider the elderly in our community and hopefully put some monies back into that program. Are there any questions?
I had a question. Did you submit any kind of request earlier in
Certainly
December?
Certainly at the very
January?
Beginning.
It's under lifespan.
It's under
lifespan, okay.
It's under
in-home
life-
service?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the Caring Callers program.
Okay.
And lifespan, the name has been changed now to Senior Volunteer Services. When you hear that in the community, there's a new name change because Lifespan Services collapsed, and we would like to get under from underneath that any connection with that name. So yes, that's the Lifespan Foundation in-home services to the elderly, in actuality, is a caring callers program.
I think, and just to add to your program also, there's many, many elderly that live here that do not have family here locally.
Exactly. Or children. Families have fragmented in our society today, and the elderly who sits at home and doesn't speak up because that generation, you know,
they didn't want to bother anybody.
Exactly. They weren't out there to bother anybody. But there is a need, and it's growing, and I would hope you'd reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you, Wanda. Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on this item?
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council Members. Bernadette Bernardi, the Literacy Council, 1264 Higuera, San Luis Obispo.
Take it now and don't come back. I missed that.
No. Oops. No, it was just a way of looking at the funding. Okay.
Jake, would you?
Yeah. Did I get you in trouble, Jake?
No, not at all. Basically, the concept was, and the City Council discussed it at your November 13th meeting, is instead of giving small amounts to every organization, give the larger amounts to the organization where they can be effective for 1 year, then rotate the granting of the awards. The City Council agreed to that philosophy at the November meeting, and so that's what she was referring to. We didn't tell her she couldn't come back, but we may not recommend her next year.
But she got the intent.
But she got the intent.
Is any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Anybody? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Should we fight?
Sure. I see Interim Chief Doug Hamp in the doorway.
Okay.
I have a few questions and a couple of questions and maybe a statement. So I guess the first question I have is, we have a part-time code enforcement officer now. There seems to be, obviously, there is a lot of energy to do proactive code enforcement. That said, I think I am on board with, if that's the direction we want to go in, and if we have to fund it out of the general fund, I think it's a high enough priority that we do that. If you're saying in this proposal that if we take some money to make that position full-time to help go out on a daily basis, you know, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week to get things cleaned up, that's okay. So then the question I have then is, how much would it take to make the part-time code enforcement officer full-time now?
Well, the current budget includes around $45,000, $50,000 to add a full-time code enforcement officer in the police department. That funding was frozen by the council as we looked at the blue ribbon process and so on. I think what we talked about last week was that the chief is preparing a proposal for the council that would allow us to move towards full-time staffing in the fire department, and that part of the offset for that would be to say that with those full-time folks, there are duties that they would be able to do, such as proactive code enforcement. They already have to do code enforcement with regard to the fire code, and if they were doing that in a targeted, directed program, like the program that the chief set up in Paso Robles, that would be a way to start to transition towards a full-time fire department. Chief can explain.
Yeah, and now that the chief is here, could you, as you start to answer this question, could you enlighten me as to how you see a code enforcement officer in the mix of what you've set up?
The code enforcement, and it's a matter of the program that I use that works effectively is very regimented, and it's laid out in a manner that you hit the priority areas first, and you it's a passive program. It's a it's it provides for continuing good relationships with those members of the community that, you know, are willing to cooperate. And it's just, it works very well.
And do you, I guess I'm trying to, what I'm trying to understand, Chief, is we have a part-time code enforcement officer. We're talking about having a full-time code enforcement officer. So we would still have that position. They would just be under the fire department reporting to
Oh, I'm sorry. Whatever. No, the fire department would take it over in its entirety, and you'd have, if you allowed six people on, you'd have six code enforcement officers.
Oh, okay.
And a program manager that made the program continue to move and be a very proactive.
Okay.
So you get quite a work product out of it.
So the program manager would come out of the fire department?
Yes.
Say?
Yeah, it would just be one of the supervisors who would be in charge of the program.
So actually we're getting, say, six for or five for
exactly.
One.
You have a lot more eyes looking, and then after a period of time you rotate the zone. You break it into zones of responsibility. Then you have new eyes go through. And it works very, very well.
Councilmember Ekblom?
But it does take funding for that. You're not doing that for nothing. You need to move the dollars.
You'd have to move the funds. Yeah, you move the funds over,
right,
and just assign the funds to the department as
right.
part of their work outputs.
So it's not saving money. It's just
no, it's a reallocation.
Right.
That's part of that spending money that Mr. Navarro talked about.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
so I will finish. Mayor, I agree with you. I think the ADA upgrades are necessary at City Hall. I think the Community Development Director aptly pointed out that we need to upgrade the restrooms, the doors, the entry doors, and the counters and other items around here. So I don't have a huge issue with that part of this. I do have an issue with taking the 52.8 as, and I applaud staff and their efforts because they clearly were trying to put in place a policy that they had heard from this council. But I think if we're serious about this, then it should be the general fund. It should be a long-term funding, not year to year through this process. What I would like to see is if there's a way to take that 52.8 and put it in with the affordable housing. I think Dave had a great point. And I know I'm kind of getting the cart before the horse. The last comment I was going to make is I had previously asked about agendizing and coming back with a city policy on property acquisition and disposal of that property. Furthermore, I was kind of hoping we could have gotten through the goal session to say that we want to appropriate a certain dollar amount for staff that would include the residential set aside, that might include the CDBG monies, and give them some criteria and say if there's a site that comes available, purchase it, because we need to be in the business of facilitating affordable housing, whether that's workforce housing or whatnot. And so I would certainly like to see if we can do that and within the next year to 2 years facilitate a project. So if there's a way that we can take the 52881 and move it to affordable housing.
Housing, as Dave was talking about, to get folks in on the ground floor to leverage a project like that, then that's pretty easy, and that's you know, just turning the money back over into where it came from, what it was allocated for in the first place. The concept of being able to acquire property when it's in the city or the agency's interest quickly is something that, as you mentioned, we didn't get into a lot of detail yet or gotten that kind of direction from the council. That's the kind of thing that with that direction or as part of the budget process, we can identify funding sources that have fewer strings attached to them than CDBG does, for example, in order to have that kind of immediate response that the council or the agency may be interested in. So I need some clarification. If it's the property acquisition is the goal, then perhaps another funding source would be more appropriate. If it's just rolling money back into the kind of program that existed before, where we don't really have a proactive approach to make sure that happens at this point in time. And so then we get wrapped around the axle with regard to spending money.
In addition to what Mr. Anderson has said, is that we have a number of very proactive housing programs. As part of the housing element update, some of those goals are to provide affordable housing. So if it is the desire of the council to put that in affordable housing, you could transfer that down into that segment if you wish to do that. And what we can do as part of a work program, as Mr. Anderson had indicated, as part of the budget process, identify what work programs we will be utilizing that affordable housing money for. And I believe that it's okay to leave it unspecified, but once it comes to actual utilization for affordable housing, we would have to document that, show it meets the national objectives and CDBG eligible. So what you're trying to get at, we may be able to do under a more specific work program through the budget process. And so if you want to move that from code enforcement to affordable housing under the 04 allocation and leave it generally open as to how we're going to expend that money for affordable housing, that would be, I think that would be fine with Tony as well as the county.
I could agree. I can get on board with that. I think that's a better way to go. I just want to make sure that we are utilizing every resource we have to try and facilitate this type of a project, because I know I recently saw a report over the last year or two that the county did, and they were talking about number of affordable units that were created in the various cities in this county, and Grover Beach had zero. So it was it's something that caught my attention, and I just want to figure out a way that we can be proactive and facilitate something.
I would like to see something in affordable housing like Oceano has with those units in there. They're beautiful for all those workers that live in those things and a little community center.
I love spending money. So once we get our programs established, we can be very proactive. Okay. And we can actually start marketing as well as our economic development for the community. And there's many different things we could do to market that program. So, but I think the goal of the city manager is really set up some long-range programs and plans that when the opportunity comes up, then we can just pull that plan and program out, and that way we have the council's direction, and we can begin implementing that in a rapid pace. So, and it's going to take us a little bit of time to get to that point. And I know it's frustrating. But
No, just forgive me if I don't have all the greatest confidence in our housing element, because we did it in a 3.5-hour session in which it was like pulling teeth. I think there were some critical goals that may have gotten left behind. That I'm not, so I'm less than thrilled about that.
Well, we do have another opportunity, because as Mr. Anderson indicated, HCD has reviewed the housing element, and they do want us to take a second look at that and provide some additional detail, which gives you as a city council an opportunity, if you wish to have some other programs incorporated in there, then we certainly have a look at that. So if you have suggestions or ideas, we'll be coming back to you, as well as the commission, probably within 2 months.
Yeah, because I just think it's important that we as the council and we as a city establish a framework and find a way to leverage a project in this community. So that's high on my list.
I had a question, Jake.
Yes, sir.
Where did we spend the $52,000 we allocated last year for ADA?
We have not. We've hired an architect to look at and start beginning to prepare plans, and that's how we came up
to do
with
what?
To look at the ADA and the doors and the counter and the restrooms. They're starting to prepare the plans.
So that's going to be $90,000.
Again, I would expect it's going to be more by the time we finish up, but we anticipate $40,000 would be sufficient to get us to a point where we can do portion of the project, shut it down, and then as we need more money, if we do need more money, to ask for other allocations in the future.
Jake, okay. Could you...
yes, sir.
When we look at the 2003 allocation...
Yes, sir.
...numbers there... the public services amounts are all pretty much going to be expended during the course of this year.
Yes.
The 16th Street park improvements, I think, are going to happen this year.
Yes.
The affordable housing isn't. The small business will. The handicap ramps aren't, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so we're looking at adding $48,000 on top of $30,000 from this year, and perhaps the $52,000, if the council were to reallocate the $52,000 of program income to affordable housing, and perhaps the $48,000 of handicap ramps, we could accomplish most of those by just reappropriating the $32,000 from this year, and perhaps that $48,000 could be the code enforcement program
term. We talk about improving the streets, but we never talk about sidewalks. You know, so I don't know what's been done. We're talking about ADA ramps, and we've got ADA ramps in the middle of nowhere, for Christ's sake. I mean, there aren't any sidewalks nearby.
Well, one of the new requirements that Tony has put on us is to provide a map for where the ADA ramps will be going as part of our work program, and that will show us where the ADA ramps are needed. It'll give us a better comprehensive overview as to where we need to go, and to ensure that we don't just put an ADA ramp out to nowhere that goes no place after that.
Skateboarders like it.
However, there may be some ability to put sidewalks in once we get the ADA ramp in there for travel for ADA folks. And so during the conference over the weekend, that connection has been made in a couple of, I believe, cases that we may be able to tap into to show that we could use the money for sidewalks as well. But, again, that's something I have to work with Tony about and see how we can do, again, the comprehensive program to make sure we spend the money in the most effective place that does the best good for the community.
That makes me nervous, spending money for sidewalks, because we require all property owners to put in their own curb gutter and sidewalks. And so all of a sudden you're going to go out.
Okay, but again, this could be in conjunction with an affordable housing project where the ADA program, the sidewalks could be installed to write down the cost, keep the cost lower for infrastructure improvements associated with affordable housing. There's many different ways we can make that connection with affordable housing. So
see, that makes sense. But if you're going to just say we're going to fix this block in the middle of one of our streets, and they get free sidewalks, everybody else has to pay for it.
Even if we did that, we would have to show it met our national objectives and is an eligible project. So there's some criteria that we would have to go through. But again, it's developing our long-range plan and see how we can build upon that to effectively spend the money for the best bang for the buck in our community.
Mayor, if I could, I'd just like to clarify the record with regard to the interest in code enforcement. My interest as a member of staff, besides trying to accomplish the goals that the council laid out, is to address a proactive code enforcement program within the redevelopment area to eliminate blight and the associated problems with that. That works towards strengthening our tax base in a number of ways. And it also works towards ensuring higher levels of employment. We had an incident not long after, I think, Chief Hamp came on board, where there was a release of a noxious chemical. Several employees ended up having to go to the hospital. That occurred in this area. Those were hazardous materials that were improperly stored. It's the kind of thing that a proactive code enforcement program would be able to ensure a program that's intensive to try to address blighting kinds of conditions and conditions that have a negative impact on the quality of life in the community. And I think that's a fundamental national goal that the federal government has established for the Community Development Block Grant Program, and this would be an excellent way to accomplish that. Further, it's something that would be expended during the coming fiscal year. There's no question that we wouldn't be banking this money, waiting for something to happen or waiting for a program to be established. We'd be spending it doing something proactive and positive, and it would have the secondary beneficial impact of helping us move towards having a full-time permanent fire department and emergency medical service. So that's what my goal was in going along with the recommendations that Jake came up with, and why trying to be responsive that I'm hearing tonight, that if you wanted to have that $52,881 roll over in as that program income roll over into the back into the affordable housing program, that I think the $48,000 for handicap ramps on top of the $31,000 that we have this year, which we have not been proactive and identified locations for that make sense, may be an overkill in that regard, and that a higher priority in my mind would be blight elimination within the redevelopment area that has the additional impact of helping us establish a full-time fire and emergency medical services department.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
I don't have any questions. I just want to say I think staff's done a good job. I think they've tried to implement our policy, and I understand everything that the city manager is saying. That said, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay, no, just a minute. Any other?
Did you want to make a motion? Did you say?
Before he does it, I wanted to say something.
Okay.
Do you have any other else?
No, other than the fact that just as a compromise, I thought maybe you could split that $48,000 half for sidewalks and half for code enforcement to help kick off the program, understanding that it's not an ongoing salary, a funding source for that salary position. And I think it's real important that we keep that $52,000 rolled over into low-income housing where it came from.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I guess, you know, this weekend, I think on Sunday, I walked and drove the city for about 2 hours up and down streets. I drove Saratoga from Oak Park all the way down to Front Street. You know, there were some citizens who came in here who talked about trying to pay for the sidewalks if the city would make their street a priority. Yet when you go down that street, it's the only block that's missing sidewalk and handicap ramps on Saratoga 13th and 14th. And, you know, I drove through other parts of the city.
Seniors. And that bothers me.
They're going to use the city hall. They're going to use the sidewalks. They're going to use the low-income housing. They're on equal footing with everybody else in the city. I don't know where you're coming off on that one. But.
Well, I have to disagree, Dave, because a lot of them don't even get out of their houses.
Well, okay.
You know, and they do use a taxi service and that stuff, but other than that, they don't get out.
Okay. Is there anything else?
No.
Okay.
We're
dragging this on, and I'd like to make a motion that under Exhibit A, that we make a few changes. We would move the allocation of $52,881 into affordable housing. We would split the handicap sidewalk ramps fund of $48,000. Equally, we'd leave $24,000 in handicap sidewalk ramps, and $24,000 of it would go into the code enforcement officer. I don't see it there now. Okay.
Yeah, it's above. Third line down.
Third one, yes. And the City Hall ADA upgrades would remain the same as is written there. Am I?
So the total for code enforcement will be, what, $39,000 for 2024
and the 15.
39,000, yes,
sir. Understanding that it will take more than that, and we'll have to fund that out of general fund this next year, and
because we need the position. But
it'd be positions, okay. Wouldn't it?
Position.
If we go with what Chief Hamp wants. Yeah.
Well, my understanding is the theory, it would, all the firefighters would be code enforcement officers, as well as our building official, as well as planning staff. And so you won't just have one position. It'll be a whole department. So,
but there will be a cost associated with that.
The cost
will be more than the $39,000, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. I'm sure it will be.
So anyway, that's my motion.
Whatever it is.
And the compromise motion that protects some general fund money. But it's not going very far.
Well,
I agree with your motion and concept, but I think the mayor has a good point. And so I'll make a second just so we can have discussion or.
That's fine.
Okay, don't second it.
Don't second, we'll have discussion first. We'll kill the bug.
Okay, so you want to discuss before?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to ask him for a friendly amendment or something?
David, would you give me $1,000 so I can...
As a clarification.
Clarification, please.
Prior to discussion, it would probably be appropriate to either have the second or have no second and have the motion die
for
lack of
second. He withdrew his second.
I'll withdraw my second.
So the motion is off the table at this point in time.
We're sort of standing still right now, yes. It's off the table. Lifespan, $1,000, it wouldn't hurt. Just as long as I know that some of the seniors will be taken care of. $1,000 isn't better than nothing at all. And I have to clarify again, there is a lot of seniors out there who, if it wasn't for friends or neighbors or somebody, they need help. And a lot of them do not have family here. They depend, and I have to say this, on their hairdresser or a friend or somebody else to go get their groceries, go do something for them, or even go pick up their medications. They can't always afford to go to a pharmacy that doesn't deliver. Or when they use their cab fares, and that's all done. But there's things that they would like to do, and they can't. So, there. So, please.
I understand it, and I understand in the total picture it's not a lot, but I voted against this last fall for that simple reason. This is the wrong program to start allocating small amounts of funding that have to be tracked, and it's the wrong place for it. And so I vote against it before, and I'll vote against it now.
Oh.
But you have two votes. I can count. So do what you want. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, let me try this. Boy, for the three of us, this is going on and on, huh? Mm-hmm. I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution for the 2004 Community Development Block Grant Program and recommendation $40,000 for ADA upgrades to City Hall, $52,881 into affordable housing. And then we will split the $48,000 from, I guess, the handicapped sidewalk program, with half going to the code enforcement officer, making that a total of $39,000 for the code enforcement. And then I would also like to see that instead of $8,000 to Central Coast Exploration Station, that we go $6,000 to Central Coast Exploration Station and $2,000 to Lifespan, because it looks like the harvest bag has actually been given money, allocated money in 2003. So that would be my compromise motion. I think I kind of covered everyone in that one.
Did we cover everybody? Did we get it straight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will second that. I'm sorry. Roll call, please. I'm dreaming.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
Thank you.
Wow.
Okay.
And Just for the record, the other allocations shown on the attached resolution are as what was recommended by staff, correct? Other than those modifications.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, now we're going on to B, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Does anybody want to break yet?
If you... Well, we have...
Public services amount by $2,000, making the recommended allocation for the Central Coast Exploration $6,000. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
No questions.
Questions? No. Okay, this is a public hearing, so is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Is there any questions of staff?
Still no questions. let's see. I'm going to try and make a motion here, if I can get myself organized. I move we adopt Resolution B for the 2004 Community Development Block Grant Program and recommendation for allocation to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors recommending funding for Central Coast Exploration Station Youth Program Development in the amount of $6,000.
Okay. There's no second, so.
This is your show, you can second it.
You don't want to discuss it, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, then I'll second that. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Honorable Mayor, if I may recommend, in view of the fact that there is an outside possibility that Councilmember Arnoldson may still arrive before the end of this meeting, it may be appropriate to continue item 8C at least until the end of the meeting rather than simply closing it out this time.
Okay. We will do that. You want me to read that into? We will continue item 8C until the end of the meeting if and when Mr. Councilmember Arnoldson shows. If not, it'll be continued to the next meeting.
It would be appropriate to obtain consensus from the council.
Okay, could I have consensus, please? Consensus?
Consensus.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Raper.
Thank you, ma'am.
We are going to take about a 5-10 minute break. 10-minute break. How about that?
Yes, ma'am. Mayor, members of the council, before you tonight is a proposed noise ordinance, which adds new text to the city's municipal code, and also it rearranges the existing municipal code under a chapter 1.01, which is noise standards. And the beginning, oh, well, the reason for that. What we wanted to do is to illustrate the noise meter, which is noise ordinance. During the TANG meetings, there were some discussions about from the committee to have the interior noise levels at 35 dB level, which is a noise level. And what we had done as part of the review is reviewed our noise element. And our noise element has identified the interior noise level at 45 dB. And so we felt, from a staff perspective, and the committee actually supported the effort to get a noise ordinance that would be adopted that is in compliance and implements the noise element of the city's general plan. there are some communities that do have a 35 dB interior noise ratings for apartments, but I'm not really sure what their noise element has identified. So what we wanted to do is make sure that we were consistent with our noise element, with the noise ordinance that we present to the City Council for consideration tonight. The TANG committee has prepared the noise ordinance. We tweaked it somewhat to ensure compliance with the noise element. And then what we took is the existing ordinance text and take it out of section 1.01 and took all the existing text and put it into the new chapter of the noise and called it noise standards. If you look at the attachment one, which is the actual ordinance, you'll see a whole series of texts that have been deleted. And what we identified, like section 3101, which is excessive noise, general is deleted. Section 3101.1, noise construction of buildings and projects. Section 3101.2, noise, schools, hospitals, churches, and rest homes. 3.101.3, noise emanating from vehicles. Section 3101.4, second police response to parties. And then section 3102, sound amplifying equipment. And then 3102, which is the existing code, is the same. They've all been deleted. And what they're being proposed to be is to be recodified under Chapter 1.01, which is noise. And the first several sections of the proposed ordinance are the existing city text relating to noise. And it talks about, again, the excessive noise, the construction of buildings, and so on and so forth. Where we get into the new proposed noise ordinance, it begins on section 3120.7, general noise regulations. And what this new text does is to identify that excessive noise is unlawful for any person to willfully or and my mind would help me out there, Martin. Thank you, negligently. Yes, thank you. my mind went stop, but negligently for making any noise which disturbs the peace and morals of and the quiet of any neighborhood. And what this does do is set up proposed as part of the text before the City Council. We've identified prohibited acts under the code, proposed code. We also, under section 1320.12, exceptions, identified exceptions to the noise ordinance and noise standards, and also the ability for the Public Works Division and the Building Divisions to give exceptions under unique circumstances. Some of the exceptions to the noise standards are the activities conducted in public parks, playgrounds, public or private school grounds, including but not limited to school athletic and school entertainment events. The use of mechanical device or equipment related to or connected with emergency activities, safety signals, warning devices, emergency pressure relief valves, noise sources associated with work performed by the city or private or public utilities and the maintenance or modification of city or public utility facilities, and the exemption of collection of waste or garbage is also exempted from the noise standards. Then we have this caveat that any activity which is permitted by state or federal law is exempted under our noise standards. Also, as part of the noise standards, we have the last section is under B, appeals, and what we have done, what the ordinance has or is attempting to do, set up two different appeal processes, because if the building official looks at violations in terms of noise standards in their area of expertise, the individuals would have an opportunity to make their appeal to the community development director. And should they decide not to, the person who are subject to the appeal, if they're dissatisfied with that decision, they also may appeal it to the City Council for the hearing. The secondary appeal process is when the police department cites people for excessive noise, they have a right to appeal for interior staff of the police department. Should they, should the staff act upon the appeal and they're dissatisfied with that, they may appeal that to the police chief. Should they still be dissatisfied with the police chief's decision, they may make that appeal to the city council. So we have a chain of appeals to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to state their case and get a fair and impartial decision in terms of the appeals. The tank committee completed a lot of work, and when I stepped into the position, I was giving this proposed ordinance, saying that they have completed it. In comparing it with some previous communities that I have worked with, the noise standards are pretty standard in terms of the content of the proposed ordinance that is before you. Should you have any questions, I'll be happy to respond. And so hopefully the meter has been bouncing all over the place. So.
Is there any questions? Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Yes, sir.
Jake, the list of exceptions that you read, are they in this document that I missed?
I sure hope they are. Let's see, it's under section 3120.11. It appeared to be out of the zoning code, and so anything outside the zoning code comes directly to the city council, such as the sign ordinance as well.
Okay. And on page 6, under B2, there's a definition that for event.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is that like a single event? Is that a multiple events, a series of events?
It could be a single event. It could be a large party. It could be a parade or some private gathering that creates an event. And this is out of the existing, this section here, 3120.4, is out of our existing municipal code, and this is what we currently have to work with at this point in time.
Okay, I don't have any other questions at this time, Mayor.
Councilmember Ekbom.
I had one, Mr. Raper.
See?
69. 69, okay.
This adjusts to 70, so now... So it goes up higher, and if you talk really loud, it'll go above the 70 mark, and so this only goes. It has an adjustable scale on it. You can go up to 100, and you have to be almost deafening sounds to get into the 100 reading. So it goes down as low as 60, and that way you can see the noise levels.
I was trying to think of. Of a situation at the Trueville recreational building there. They have neighbors 10 feet from their property line mm-hmm. on their side, second mm-hmm. story. If they have an ordinary party there and you open the doors mm-hmm. to get some fresh air, I wonder how loud some music would be there. So when you're talking about 30 or 40 feet away from the building, you have a residence. And if 60 dBA is the residential evening time period rating, I just don't know how loud that is.
That activity would be exempt under 3120.11. It says activities conducted in public parks, public playgrounds, and public or private school grounds, including but not limited to school athletic and school entertainment events. In the broad definition, it's a public facility, and it you could have those kind of activities there and it would be exempt. However, as a good neighbor, if they do have a band inside and it does create a disturbance to the neighborhood, one of the policies that previous communities that I've worked for is they would require the doors to be closed and the windows to be closed to not to let that sound out into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So, but it is exempt under the code.
An example that we have quite often is the hall there on 13th Street, that they have parties there and the neighbors go berserk.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be a real enforcement problem when
who
the police
first?
Go out there and they
So they show up, the band stops, and then you can't get a reading. So how do you know?
Well, it goes back into the buying desires to amend this. The city attorney raised the question on mixed uses. How do we handle that? I think we're taking care of that in our code amendment, where we have the interior at 45 decibels, and then they would be subjected to the, if they're in commercial and or the industrial, they'd be subjected to the exterior noise standards for those zone districts. So it's not really intended to be an answer to everything, but it certainly is the beginning. Now we have measurements and rules that we can enforce. If we find that we cannot live with them, we certainly have the ability to come back and amend the ordinance, amend the noise element as well, take a strong look at those kinds of situations. We may find some activities that we want to put into the exception part as part of the ordinance. If we find something that's reoccurring that's in the public interest that creates some disturbance, and like picking up trash and garbage. They come around early in the morning, and sometimes they are noisy. They would exceed that noise level, and that's why the ordinance itself has exempted that type of activity.
Okay, 3120.2. Mm-hmm. Noise, schools, hospitals, churches, restaurants. It just says it's unlawful to create any noise that disturbs them, so there's no provision for... I mean, there is some project that you have to... Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't say anything about hours or anything else. You just can't do it if it's going to disturb the residents. It seems like if they have to jackhammer there, there's no... I mean...
Well, again... In that kind of situation, would go over into the exceptions under 3120.12 in terms of the Public Works Division. If they're doing an encroachment permit or public works on there, they could come in and get an exception. If they're doing some building activity that they would exceed the noise levels, they would get an exception there.
Okay.
It flows through and. And again, it may not be perfect, but at least we have a tool to begin working with. And as we start working with this and getting the nuances down, we can come back and tweak the ordinance to make it more effective.
Okay. The next one down, 3120.3.
Okay.
Emanating from vehicles. It talks about there's no noise or music emanating that can be heard at a distance of more than 100 feet. It doesn't have any level. I mean...
Okay, this is our existing noise element, noise standards that we have. And again, there's no standards, but if you go back over into. There's another category that talks about sound vehicles and booming boxes.
I thought this was the end all, do all, end all ordinance here, but we're mixing together. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're mixing together.
So.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
On page 13, domestic power tools machinery.
Yes, ma'am.
On A.
Didn't we exempt all those?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Why do you have to wait till 10 o'clock?
In the morning.
Oh, I see, from 10 p.m., 7 a.m. to 10.
Yeah, to be the quiet time for night.
I don't think I want to mow my lawn at midnight.
Some people may. Yeah.
Okay.
Is an ordinance that can be enforced, and in the event that it would be challenged in court, I think that we have as reasonable of a chance of succeeding on it as on any other that we have in our code.
And I think sometimes, because it gets where government is over-powerful, and I think some people create their own nuisance, mm-hmm. and so it just depends who your neighbors are or... so forth.
One of the important things that Mr. Raper already pointed out is that we have vertical consistence. In other words, the noise element of our general plan provides for certain levels. And even though that the TANG members prefer to see numbers that would be lower or more restrictive than those provided in the noise element of the general plan, the ordinance is consistent with those numbers, and that is one of the important things. That's one of the first things that these types of cases are evaluated on. Basically, is there consistency between the general plan and the code, and then the process of enforcement?
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Scholz.
Yeah, thank you. Good question on section 3120.2, Dave, because I had a note that said, what does this mean? I think Jake's addressed that. Jake, the question that I had was regarding the acceptance of the noise standards.
Mm-hmm.
To just say activities conducted in public parks, public playgrounds, and public and private school grounds. And I'm wondering, is that too broad? Is because I don't know. I'm thinking if I as an individual take my boombox out there and I'm conducting it in a public park,
mm-hmm.
am I exempt from this?
Well, no. Basically, I think if you go back into the existing codes where it talks about excessive noise general, and if the police officer comes out and advises them that they're disturbing the peace of other residents, and then you could control it that way. I it would be my understanding that these kind of activities are public activities, and public that are leased facilities or public activities. And in the previous community that I worked in, the neighbors always complained about the band playing and the football games because they certainly exceeded the noise levels adopted by that community. And clearly, those kinds of activities were exempt under that code as well. And so we advised them that these are school activities. People are participating. They're exempt from the noise ordinance. And we understand that they have a concern or dissatisfied with that. But until the ordinance is changed, they're permitted to go forward. Good question. I know in previous community we did have amendment to the noise ordinance which prohibited individuals from disturbing the peace of other participants in the public park per se. So that's a good question. Other organizations is a noise permit which authorized them to exceed the noise level for a certain specific time and a specific event. So if you wish to have us to investigate that and maybe work up the special exceptions and require I believe it addresses it because it requires an application for that. For if anybody wants to have like a block party, they have to come in and get a special event or an application to exceed the noise ordinance itself or noise standards. Keep referring to noise ordinance, but it's noise standards. So that may be built into this already, and we refer to a fee for that application for processing that. So it may be already addressed in terms of your question, your concern. But utilizing it from the boombox and the public park situation, that's a good question, and we may want to clarify that somewhat. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, would that take in consideration, say, like Miners rents Grover Heights Park, and they have sack races and basketball and everything going on. It's a mm-hmm. private party, but yet they've made use of the whole facility.
Uh-huh.
Would that take that in? And if they have music also?
And that may be a good case for a noise application that we could issue at staff level for that kind of event during certain restricted certain times and make it ensure it cuts off at maybe at 10 p.m. instead of allowing it to go late into the night.
No, there's not enough lighting.
Well, you never know.
Okay. Mr. Scholz, anything else?
No, I'm fine. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Ekbom, anything else? Okay, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone else in the public that would like to speak on this item? State your name and address.
Okay. Mayor, council members, my name is Jesse Lemus. I live at 1384 Mentone. I live across from the Mentone water retention basin, where there are kids that'll go out there and they will play their boom boxes. It affects me, and I'm catty corner from that area. What are you going to do about them being out there and playing their boom boxes?
Is this at all time during the day or is it nighttime? What time?
Basically, it can be any time. However, I would like to thank the Grover Beach Police Department also for coming out on calls I've made on the problems in my immediate neighborhood, too. I mean, it has decreased, but it's still a problem. So that's one of my concerns is how would you address that? How would you find them? Because that is of a private nature, for one. It's not a public party. It's just, you know, someone out there playing their boom boxes. And it's a low-level base that affects you also.
By the basketball courts and all
yes.
that?
Yes. And also Grand Avenue. I very rarely go down there, but the
force that. The reality is if the car is going eastbound in the 1500 block of Grand and the officers in the 600 block of Grand going westbound, it's kind of hard for us to catch them. But, yes, we do issue those citations. Concerning the basketball courts, yes, there's a problem. The kids come out there and play their boom boxes. We do respond. We make them turn it off. The current noise ordinance allows us to, if we feel it's unreasonable, to tell them to turn it off. If we don't feel it's unreasonable, then we give them a warning and ask them to be a little more neighborly. Like I try to tell people, you have the right to play your music and be as loud as you want, but your neighbors have the right to have as quiet as they want it. Somewhere there has to be a happy medium, and it's more like let's be neighbors and be a little more common sense on this. Unfortunately, some people don't, you know, respond to common sense issues, and this is why we have these type of ordinances. And we're more than happy to issue citations. If we respond out and a citizen wants to, because there are current penal code sections that allow us to issue citations also for loud noises, loud noise in public, if the person wants to, you know, make a citizen's arrest or make a violation, we'll issue a citation. But we also do issue for the municipal code currently as it's stated. However, most times we try to get compliance by voluntary compliance. We ask people to turn it down. If we respond back out, it's a party, then we hit them with a party ordinance, and they start paying for our services.
I have a question. Maybe it's off the wall, but there is windows that cut sound.
Yes.
Do these people who complain that have those type of windows, or do they just have your regular windows? I mean, you think about it, there is windows that do cut out sound.
I'm not a window expert, but I can tell you that there are double pane windows that help down the sound. Most times people just close their windows while they're having loud music, and that help cuts it down 50% right off the bat, and then returning it down to but, you know, we get into these parties, we get into loud gatherings, we get into the basketball courts, the parks, we get into people who apparently own hot tubs that make too much noise when the motor kicks on, and people are upset about that. There's people who complain every time somebody outside the longboards gets on a motorcycle and starts it up. When they do that, we get complaints. Of course, by the time we get there, the motorcycle's gone. Mm-hmm. People complain about different businesses in our city all the time. We come out and we make a contact and we ask them to turn it down. Now apparently we're going to have a way to determine how loud they really are. So it will be a tool for us to help to reduce some of this.
So it'll be a tool for our police officers to be doing things that they could be doing other things otherwise.
We're going to respond to any call for service as long as...
That's a nice way to get... Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak on this item? Yes.
Jesse Lemus again. I'm also concerned about the fact that you have it at 45 decibels for residences, for internal noise. I live in a multi-dwelling where you get that low-level bass coming through. I would like to see it at 35 decibels because of the fact that that low-level bass is hard to... I have my own noise meter. I do. I've heard the Filipino hall from where I live out on Mentone. You can hear their low-level bass sometimes, and people do not complain. Doesn't mean that the problem doesn't exist. They're just not willing to take that step to call. So just consider all that when you...
I think we have to be fair in honoring
make your final
decision. You know, your neighbors and you yourself. You know, if you sleep with the window open, maybe I would suggest an air conditioner or some other source of ventilation. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know.
Mayor, I'd also like to point out that Jesse has, as you, the council probably already knows, been a member of the TANG and has been trying to help us draft an ordinance that addresses a number of problems that she has and problems that the rest of the community has. And really should acknowledge her participation in that.
Yes, I've also served on the TANK committee, and I've seen her there. But I'm just trying to find an equal, you know, neighbors helping neighbors. And it's like, do the neighbors have to turn theirs down because she has her window open? Or, you know, maybe an elderly person goes to bed at 5 or 6, and the neighbors don't go to bed till 10. You know, it's trying to find a happy medium between neighbors.
Well, that would be true. I would say depending on the neighborhood you live in. If you have good neighbors, that's not a problem. If you have neighbors that don't care, then it makes it difficult for someone that is trying to be a good neighbor. And just try to get decent sleep so you can go to work the next day. I mean, that's what a lot of it is, too.
I know. So. I live across the street from the park, but I knew that when I bought my home. And I have a couple problems with some of my neighbors, and yet some other neighbors are just awesome. It's just have to try to find a happy medium.
Well, you try, but sometimes it just doesn't work. Well, anyway, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else wants to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council.
Would you like me to start?
Yes, Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Yeah, I would also like to acknowledge Jesse's participation in TANG, and I was at several meetings when some of the issues had come up. I believe that the group had decided to go forward with the noise ordinance as is, with slight amendments to ensure consistency with the noise element, and then to come back at a later date for hopefully an update, let's say, of the noise element, because I know there were areas of discussion that talked about the time restrictions. I think there was members that wanted to go, instead of saying from 10 to 7 or 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., that it be reduced to 9 p.m. There was also a discussion, I think Jesse brought up 35 dBA for common interest type developments, and I know the communities do that. I think the problem that we're having right now is that if we take that next step, there's really nothing to support it in a noise element, and it becomes an issue of, and I think the city attorney sort of pointed to this earlier, of inconsistency. But I do believe she's raised a valid point with 35, and maybe at some point in the future when the group comes forward with an update to the ordinance and the element, that we would take a look at common interest developments like planned unit developments, because that's a lot of the development that we're
the having. Effort that's gone into this.
Yeah.
I think it's there's some kind of a problem when ordinary people are reading it and we have to fall back on a different area because it doesn't address it, and we're back and forth, and it's very confusing, and I'm worried about when we start fine-tuning everything so strong or so restrictive that ordinary citizens in ordinary situations become violators of something.
Exactly.
We have to be a little careful here. We're a community, and we have to learn to accept some level of impacts from the people around us. If we want to be absolute quiet, we need to get away from everybody. I think that's part of being in a city or being in a community, and that doesn't mean that you have to put up with outrageous situations from anybody, but I think we have to be a little careful about how restrictive we get in sound. When I'm looking at that meter and I'm talking and it's 55, it means it's at the maximum level right now for what I think is a very calm conversation But we are over 57, 58. Right now, we're over the standards for interior residential units, and I think we have a kind of a confusing ordinance. I know there's a lot of time spent on it. If it's a benefit to the police department for those people who actually do violate it, and we need rules in place to address them, that's fine. But to say we're going to come back later and restrict it even more, I just can't see that at all. I think we're borderline already.
Yeah, well, I think that's obviously a discussion for a later date. I think two things that we need to bear in mind is that the noise element of the general plan is a state-mandated element, and it sets out certain criteria for exterior noise, which is typically in a single-family district about 60 dB. That's in the exterior where you're out in your backyard and whatnot. And then I believe, what is that, Jake, about 45 on the interior, because normal construction stud walls, you know, plywood or a stucco wall will mitigate noise about 15 decibels. So while I applaud the demonstration this evening, the fact of the matter is if we're talking and there's a house there with the wall, what we're saying won't be anywhere near what's registering on this wall.
Open the window. The lady wants the window open.
Well, yeah, but I think you hit the nail on the head earlier that it does allow for a certain level of noise, the ambient noise that is there. You know, we talk about this in Tang about, you know, the crashing waves and things like that probably exceed the 60 dB. So the noise element addresses that. This noise ordinance is really intended to address single event occurrences like jackhammers, like boom boxes and things like that. And so we need to, if it's going to give the PD the tools to go out and try and enforce, you know, what we think is reasonable for this community, I think we need to do that. But I agree what you're saying is, I think the city manager, and I think Jesse can vouch for this, in the meetings I was often the devil's advocate because I was doing my wall project.
Yeah. Excuse me, you're yelling.
Yeah, I'm yelling. But he was higher than me.
Was I?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of good work has gone into this, and if we're going to move this forward, I did have a couple of suggestions. I think Dave, I think you were correct in that it's easy for a person like Jake, who is intimate with this document, to know what sections to go to. So I would like to maybe see some cross-referencing in this document. So for example, under section 3120.2, noise, schools, hospitals, churches, and rest homes, I think at the end of that paragraph, you need to say something to the effect of unless accepted by sections 3120.11 and 3120.12. Okay. And also backing up to section 3120.1, which is construction of buildings and projects, and at the last paragraph or the last sentence of that paragraph, which talks about construction noise being Mondays through Fridays between the hours of, looks like it says 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Saturdays. Was I clear on that?
What page are we on?
I'm on page 5.
Okay. And what correction would you propose?
I think I'd like to maybe talk about if we go from 9 to 5, if we go 8 to 5, I don't know if that's that skewing the delicate balance, or is that an issue we had talked about? That doesn't give me a lot of heartburn. What I'm concerned it talks about, unless a permit.
Run that. Say that again.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'll slow down. At the end of the section, it says, and let me pick up where it says, or any other construction-type device other than between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Fridays.
Right.
Okay? So I guess that's construction activities allowed in those during those hours during the week, correct?
Right.
And then between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Is 9 a.m., okay with everyone, or...
I was thinking that 8 is probably a reasonable hour if you're...
I think 8's fine.
If you're working on a construction project and concluding at 5 p.m. Now, here's where I have the real issue. It says, unless a permit shall be first obtained from the city building inspector, such permit shall be issued. So it looks like you're allowing the building inspector to give them an exception to the 7 to 7 and, let's say, now the 8 to 5. Mm-hmm. Is that tied back into if it's a public project, or is that if
no.
someone's building homes and they have to catch up and we're going to grant an exception for them to start earlier on the weekend?
It could be building homes. It could be an industrial park, commercial construction. And the findings that he would have to make is that it would not result in unreasonable disturbance to surrounding residents. And so if it's isolated...
day, period. But they had to start, I forget it, at 5 in the morning or something like that in order to accomplish the pour of the tennis court or the something in there. So, I mean, there are those kinds of exceptions that couldn't be accomplished without some flexibility like this.
How is this going to affect those new live-work type of buildings?
That's a good question.
Well, again, as part of the referral back to the Planning Commission, the City Council wanted to ensure that the interior noise level of the residence is 45 dB. And what was clearly the intent of the live-work units, that the exterior noise would still be in the commercial and industrial range. But the emphasis was to provide them a safe harbor in terms of the residential units that they live in to the same standard that you would have for single-family or multiple-family dwellings.
So. Okay. And then another question I have is, what about the little ice cream truck that runs around and plays music?
Good question.
Hey.
Well, if he's exceeding...
He's part of noise.
If he's exceeding the decibel range, then yes, he would be advised to reduce...
Turn his little music down.
Yeah, reduce the noise down. And if we received a complaint and it violated the noise levels that are established, then yes... unless you want to exempt that, you can put an exception in the ordinance.
Well, he plays the same little music all the time.
I know. It's really irritating, isn't it?
The kids are happy.
It drives me nuts.
Yeah, the kids are happy. They know he's around.
Yes, my granddaughter's going to say yes.
The ice but Jake's the first guy out there with his quarter to get ice cream.
I wish it was a quarter.
Yeah. So
yes.
You didn't answer my questions.
Well, yes, it would apply. I mean, if his music exceeded the noise, it'd be like a sound truck going around in terms of your current ordinance. And if somebody complains about the music as being loud from a truck going around the community, or if it exceeds the newly adopted noise levels, then he would be advised to reduce his noise down to the acceptable noise level for the residential neighborhood.
So the same thing would go if a political candidate goes around in a truck or whatever and says,
well,
so-and-so, or she says, I'm so-and-so.
Well, that's a political speech. And also, the current ordinance advises that they have to get a statement from the city clerk, has to send them give them a registration for their sound truck for that kind of activities. It's like the 1950s, Back to the Future, when they're using their political soundtracks for political campaigns. But it says, under Section 31.206, no person shall use or cause to be used a soundtrack with its sound amplifying equipment in operation for any non-commercial purpose in the city without filing a registration statement with the city clerk in writing. And then sound, just above that, sound amplifying equipment talks about the control of automobiles and radios and crickets and the frogs keep her up all night long because it's just a different kind of sound. So it's a good noise move.
Okay, enough of this.
I'm getting tired.
Yeah. Am I wearing? Are we wearing you down?
Yes, sir. You are.
Well, just so everyone understands where I am,
I don't think we should. I don't like the idea of the building inspector being able to accept to grant an exemption to a construction project that will impose on neighbors. It's interesting that the city manager pointed out Hero Park when my neighbors and I try not to personalize these things, but I'm going to use that for illustrative purposes this evening, dealt with a construction company that often started prior to 7 a.m. The building inspector is not the one who lives there, so how are they really going to be able to determine what is unreasonable? I think a standard is a standard, and in order for it to be objective, in order for it to be equitable, I would like to limit as many exceptions as I can. I understand in certain instances we need that, but I think in this one, I'm not. That gives me great heartburn.
Well, and I understand what your concern is. This one is the existing noise under our municipal code. Also, in the other language on the noise standards, there is provisions for exceptions when they make certain findings. And this one identifies that that the building official or inspector must find that it's necessary, first of all, and secondly, will not result in unreasonable disturbance to surrounding residents.
And how do you quantify that?
Well, if you get a series of complaints that they're disturbing, that then it's considered unreasonable under this section, and that permit should certainly be looked at and reviewed. Also, under the new code too, is if a exception is provided, and the resident certainly could appeal that to the community development director under that sort of scenario, and then appeal to the city council. But we would like to, you know, encourage the city council to give us some flexibility when unique circumstances do come up that we can be responsive to that.
You guys ready?
I mean, then.
Okay. This is the first reading.
Then the other thing that the council talked briefly on is under 3120.11 on the exceptions, and you want us to clarify the activities in public parks, schools, and so on as to what those are. And then the other part of the dialogue and discussion was the boom boxes in the parks themselves. And I guess what we would need to do is have those amendments identified here if you wish to take action on that tonight for the first reading. And or you can continue this till the next meeting and for us to make the cross-references or whatever you wish to do, or introduce it with the intent to do that, and let's bring this back to you. And in terms of looking at that and maybe delete that and just refer back to the special exceptions code under 3120.12.
Yes.
Okay. And then you also had some concern about the from 9 a.m. to 8 a.m., upping the time a little bit for Saturdays and Sundays.
So going from 9 until 8 a.m.
Yeah, from 8 a.m. to...
I'm sorry, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on weekends is what we're saying, is what I'm saying.
Is that consensus of the other council members?
Did you say you're going to hold this over, or are you going to do it with the first reading with these?
No, we're going to continue it. Continue. I think the other benefit is we, even though we've kind of beaten this dead horse, but I would really like the other members, council members, to be here and kind of hear their perspective on this.
Sure.
Maybe we don't want to. No.
My recollection is that we tried to address the point that you raised earlier with regard to conformance with the noise element in the general plan, and I'm not sure. It seems like both decibel levels as well as hours that trigger higher and lower were part of that. So I think we would want to make sure we still have conformance and could report to the council on that as part of.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you.
That's fine.
OK.
Okay. I won't even go there. Okay, we'll continue this until the next meeting of April.
Well, I believe that there is a motion on the floor, and I do not believe there is a second to that motion at this time. And as I recall, the motion was to have the staff bring this item back to you for a first reading with some of the changes that were suggested, as well as any other adjustments and cross-referencing that would be deemed necessary.
Is that consensus, Councilmember Ekblom?
Well, I think that once you bring more discussion back, I'm not so sure I'm agreeing with the idea of eliminating the exception rule there. I thought you were just talking about you want more discussion with the other members here.
Well, I think that's part of it, but to just continue this to the 19th and to look into that, we can decide at the next meeting. Yeah.
But it sounds like we're just continuing this thing. Then.
Continuing it with direction.
Make it motion.
Yeah, because I really didn't see a problem with that. It isn't where it happens every year or every 2 years, and a big construction like that happened. We don't have that much room left.
So. We don't, but the properties that are being built are in close quarters and close proximities to existing homes. They're PUDs. Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, that is the trend of development in this community unless we start leveling blocks, unless the strawberry fields start to develop. That is going to be, in my opinion, something we need to deal with and our residents are going to be dealing with.
Yes, sir.
Again, I don't believe that we received a second for...
Chapter 4, card table licenses and regulations by adding patron security and safety measures as required by the State of California Business and Professions Code and Section 19860.
Mayor, members of the council.
Are you tired?
I am.
Briefly,
yes. The city attorney has been in correspondence with the Department of Justice in the reviewing of the current card club regulations, licensing and regulations that the city of Grover Beach has adopted. One of the areas where they felt needed improvement and made recommendation to amend the ordinance to include a patron security and safety plan. What we have proposed as part of the municipal ordinance amendment is amending Article 10, Revenue and Taxation, Chapter 4, Card Club Licensing and Regulations. And what we're proposing for the City Council is to amend Section 1040.04, Revocation of Licensing, which requires that that any card club that is operating, if they violate any of the terms and conditions of the chapter and if they are not implementing the approved security plan for the protection of its patrons, may be subject to revocation. And then the second part of the addition is the requirement of a patron security and safety plan, which would be adding Section 10411 of the Chapter 4 Card Club Licenses and Regulations. And that text would read, any holder of card table license shall submit a security plan for the premises where a card table or tables are operated. Said security plan must be reviewed and approved by the Chief of Police prior to issuance or renewal of a business tax certificate. The holder of a card table license must pay a cost recovery fee for the review and approval of a security plan as may be established by the City Council in the master fee schedule. Those would be the two additions to our current Chapter 4 card table licenses and regulations. And what we have attached to as attachment number 2 is the current municipal code with the additions and how they would appear under the municipal code once it's codified. And if you have any questions, I or the city attorney will be most happy to respond to your inquiries.
Is there any questions, staff? Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
No, actually, I was going to. No questions.
Thank you.
Councilmember Ekblom. Do you have any questions?
The last sentence on the letter from the Attorney General says that the division suggests that the ordinance be amended to include specific language to address patrons' security and safety. Is specific language just mean that you will provide a security safety thing, or does it have to say what that is?
No.
What is it?
It is the first of the two you mentioned. I've had a conversation with the Attorney General facility. It does not mandate that particular plan has to be specifically enumerated or it has to be laid out in the ordinance, but simply that a requirement for such a plan must be in there. That's basically driven by various conditions of each different facility. Some safety measures would be appropriate in some instances where they may not be in others. So after my conversations with that agency, I believe that what Mr. Raper is proposing would meet to their satisfaction what they perceive to be a insufficiency in the current language.
Go ahead.
Mayor, I was going to suggest that perhaps a word could be added to Section 10.4.11, where in the last sentence we're talking about a holder of a card table license may pay a cost recovery fee. It should be a full cost recovery fee, I think, is the intent of that. Must pay a full cost. Right.
I have a follow-up question. So for us and anyone in the audience who's listening to this, that security plan, what kind of things would we be looking for them to spell out?
Well, I think that, and I will defer to Lieutenant Thomas, who is still in the audience, but from this standpoint, it would be matters that deal with security surrounding the premises as well as inside. And these may be having full-time security guards. It may be fencing. It may be lighting. Anything else that you wish to add to that?
I'm sorry. You snuck up behind me.
Hello, Mayor, City Council members, Lieutenant Thomas, Governor Beach Police Department. Currently, the card room, he has video monitors and he tape records those. He also has, if you haven't been down there and been inside lately, he's expanded it. He's cleaned it up. He's got a gate that you have to go through to get to the door. He trains his staff to look for problems. His office and safe area is in a different side, so you can't get to it. You have to be buzzed in and out, that type of stuff. So, and the only other issue that I could see that we do an on-site inspection, and we check the back parking lot. They've cleaned it up a lot. There is a secondary door that leads into the restaurant area. But he's taken a lot of precautions down there. The main one is the videotaping system and the adequate lighting out of the porch area. I'm sure you can always do improvements. It's all whatever the decision is what we want to put on there as restrictions. How much more security do we want to put on there? Currently, he's not required to have full-time security staff.
The language that is being proposed here before you for the first reading does not necessarily in and of itself mean that any of the card room operators may have to do anything different. As Lieutenant Thomas indicated, it is very possible that the current
the premises safely. It could be a number of things, as the city attorney talked about. It could be just the bright lights in the parking lot, or it could be the television recording of the operation in the premises. It could be guards or guards within the facility that patrol the parking lots just to make sure there's no loitering in the area. A number of things. And we wanted to keep it pretty open because, as the city attorney had indicated, for one facility, a certain security plan, safety plan for the patrons may be appropriate, whereas another facility, something else may be needed to be added. And we wanted to leave it at the discretion of the police chief when they review that plan
to make sure it covers the bases from their perspective. And it gives at least the ability of the police chief to recommend and require additional steps if they haven't taken them so far.
Would upgrading landscaping and maintaining landscaping be part of that plan?
Well, it could be if it's so overly vegetated that, never mind.
That's a good point.
Yeah, people could hide into the heavy landscaping to mug them as they come out. So it could be. I mean, certainly could be as part of the security plan that clear and visible site distances are maintained.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public that likes to speak on this item? Nobody wants to speak? Okay. Bring it back to council.
I move the staff's recommendation with the wire modification suggested by a city manager on section 104.11 that we add full to the word cost recovery.
Before we have the second, there was a discussion from the gentleman that was here earlier that it wanted a third extra table or a third table. Does that have to be agendized because it's a different item, or can we go ahead with this?
That's certainly not an item that would be appropriate to include in
okay.
this discussion.
Thank you.
If it is the council's wish to amend the ordinance in some fashion at some later date, direction to staff at that time would be proper to do so.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Was there a second to the motion?
Second.
Okay. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, moving on. Item 11, amendment to Article 9, Zoning Regulations, Chapter 4, Sign Regulations by adding Section 9402B, exempt signs, A18, the placement of any sign for the purpose of raising funds that benefit the public is permitted on the city or private property subject to an agreement with the city.
Mayor, members of the council, in attempt for fundraising, the Parks and Recreation Department has created a sponsor sign for fundraising purposes. In reviewing our existing ordinance, those types of signs may be considered off-premise signs, which are not permitted by our code, current code. The proposed amendment would exempt those off-premise signs to be permitted on public or private property where the sign would be in an...
Changes the item 18 as it's written there.
That's correct.
The staff report is really confusing. It makes it... Sorry about that.
Okay.
But item 18 covers that it's just for parks and recreation
That's
benefit.
Correct. That's correct.
It's for no other public or nonprofit or anybody else. It's
That's correct.
Purely city parks and recreation.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Yeah, I like the direction it's going. I think the only... Two things that I would like to see is it maybe the city attorney could help out on this. We're talking about entering into an agreement with the city.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be best for us to explicitly state subject and approval of the landowner and or I don't know if the fact that it's an off-premise sign implies that you've gotten...
Well, before they place the sign up there, there's certainly the agreement with the city. The city has no rights to put a private sign on a private property for fundraising purposes for parks and recreation. So the current situation that they do have an agreement with the private property owners to place signs for fundraising activities. And so I don't think it's necessary, but I'll let the city attorney respond to that.
I concur with the community development director. It would be, nothing is impossible, but in order for the city to approve or enter into agreement with anyone about that type of a sign, we would require, if we already didn't have it, a verification of an existing agreement with the property owner for installation of such a sign.
Okay. And the second question I had, and maybe what I would really like to see is, I think this is a great idea, and I like the direction we're going. I do believe we need to say, as long as provided that it is in compliance with the sign regulations or requirements,
I'm talking about size and location for that area. And I'm looking at the existing example that we have. The catalyst for this is the sign at the skate park. And so I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the height or whatnot, but I just want to make sure that if there is a similar situation in the future, that people understand that we will allow off-premise signs, but they must comply with the size and location.
The general problem, if we put those kind of caveats on it, it does limit the ability for the placement of signs on public and private properties, because the sign sizes, the total square footage is limited, and I believe it's by frontage measurements here in Silver Beach. So in that case, we wouldn't be able to create a ratio of the size of the sign for the intent of the fundraising activities for Parks and Recreational Department. I think what we were relying on in terms of our discussions with the Parks and Recreations Director is part of the agreement for putting that sign up there with the advertisement. The wording would be very explicit that the city would permit. The size and the colors would be identified as part of the agreement if somebody wanted to donate a sign for either advertisement or whatever the case may be. Those signs, the sizes and the colors and placement is already identified within the agreement. And I'd have to refer to Kathy, where she's at here, that she can maybe expand on that somewhat. And the intent was not to really restrict it to our existing sign ordinances, location, and size, but to give us some flexibility.
Yeah, and maybe I went down the wrong path in identifying a specific situation. But let's say theoretical, if someone wanted to put a sign on the community building or any other public property for the benefit of raising funds, are we going to be encouraging the proliferation of signs, and are we going to make sure that we are following the same rules as everyone else?
Mayor and City Council members, when we established the sign,
yeah,
I think,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, the vast majority of the signs that potentially could occur in the skate park couldn't even be seen from the street. So I think when we originally were looking at that program, when council was looking at that program, relationship to the overall sign ordinance or how the municipal code deals with signage seemed like it would not come into play. This obviously is an amendment in order to address a current program, and at this point, the only program that's anticipated. And I think really the kind of programs that we would anticipate are probably recreational in nature, and it's the kind of thing that you might see that Arroyo Grande does in their area, and Pismo does in their area. And at this point, we have no particular program in mind outside of the skate park to exercise, you know, section or subsection 18 of the proposed ordinance. But what you're raising as an issue, I think, is exactly why we were trying to limit this to recreational or to parks and recreational programs, as opposed to, you know, economic development promotion or police or fire promotion or something like that.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Is that all, Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
That's it. That's it.
Councilmember Ekbom? Okay. This also is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the public that would like to speak on this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to council.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholl, second by Councilmember Ekbom. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Moving on to item 12, amendments to the municipal code and personal regulations.
Honorable Mayor, council members, we've received direction from staff, from council, to initiate the process of amending the municipal code and the personnel regulations to include a process by which a hearing officer is chosen that is other than the city manager for purposes of personnel disciplinary hearings. We are well into that process, but as part of that process, a necessary step is a meet and consult process with the affected employees. The city manager has notified all of the represented and unrepresented groups of the direction and the intent to make such amendments. I believe that some of the group, we will renotice it. Well, just in the event there is somebody here in the public who would like to speak to it, it may be appropriate to give them that opportunity. But this item will be renoticed
will
publicly.
Be okay. Is anybody in the audience that wants to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back and continue this to?
Date uncertain.
Date uncertain. Thank you.
Is that good? Or do you want a motion on that?
Do we need a motion for that?
Just a consensus would be fine.
Consensus that we move continue it to date uncertain?
Agreed.
I noticed it says there's no alternatives, so.
Consensus, all those in favor say aye. Yeah, really.
I vote no.
Okay. Well, the city attorney, right.
Okay, moving on to item 13, regular business, renewal of agreement with San Luis Obispo County YMCA for staffing at the South County Skate Park.
Again, at this point in time, due to the fact that Mayor Pro Tem has a conflict of interest, and without him, we do not have a quorum. Unfortunately, this item will need to be continued to next meeting.
Okay, great. Council committee reports. Let's start with Ron Arnoldson.
None.
And then we'll go to Steve Lieberman.
None.
Okay, we'll go to Dave Eckbaum,
None.
Council member.
None.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
None.
None.
This may be an appropriate time to bring back item 8C.
Just a minute. I just want to briefly go with Parks and Rec Commission. Oh. Don't forget their Easter egg hunt that they're planning for this Saturday. They spoke about their adult volleyball league. And the police department is in last place.
Well, we're tied because we'll be.
There's a claim we've made.
This still doesn't change the fact.
We're tied.
They are having a discovery camp. And the Arbor Day is set for April 30th. And that was about it. Okay. Now, no other things. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, item 8C, which the Council rescheduled or re-agendized to this time, at this point in time, it would be appropriate to bring this item before you and continue it to next.
Can we vote on April
19th? To April 19th.
Okay.
Okay. In which case, it would be appropriate to open the public hearing and then continue it to that date certain.
Okay. We'll open up the public hearing to item 8C. Anybody in the public want to speak? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back and continue it to April 18th. Or next city council meeting, whatever date that is.
April 19th.
April 19th. Thank you for the correction.
Thank you,
Don. Okay. City managers?
A close estimate of what we would be experiencing in all funds of the city, not just the general fund, all funds of the city with regard to the cost of health insurance, and that's a combination of the Blue Cross PPO as well as the medical eye service and principal dental and life insurance. The overall estimated cost to the city for the current fiscal year from all funding sources for the city's share of that cost would be $517,100 basically. For the employees would be $32,900. And for those employees who have COBRA coverage for whatever reason, some of which may not be current employees anymore but former employees, that's about $11,500. Again, these are estimates, and they're all funding sources.
Thank you, Gail, for getting us that information. Do you have any questions, Councilmember?
No, I just wanted to really thank them for this, because in the past you've seen percentages of where the prior 3 years, 1 year it went up 9%, 1 year up 14%. I was asking, how much is that? How much 14% equals how much in money? And now you can see that it would be maybe $70,000, $60,000, $70,000. Anyway, it's very significant. And so when we're seeing costs of medical insurance jumping, mm-hmm. and we automatically include that in our new budget because it's a guaranteed right to the employee, it is significant. And that's what I wanted to be able to see and pass on. Thank you. I appreciate your efforts. And I understand they were considerable. So, thank you.
Anything else, City Manager? No. Moving on to City Attorney's agenda. City Council's request for information regarding regulations for newspaper racks, existing permit regulations or requirements, and options to require design standards.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. I'll attempt to be brief. This should take longer than 2.5 hours. Let me begin. No.
3 minutes, please.
Yes. I was tasked by the council to look into the possibilities of controlling, regulating, or otherwise affecting the appearance and the existence of the newspaper racks along Grand Avenue. Not surprisingly, again, we're dealing with a First Amendment right exercise of freedom of speech, and there isn't a great deal that the city is in a position to do to obviously ban the existence of these. A couple of cases, Raymer versus City of El Cajon, that attempt failed completely. In another case, where City of Burbank attempted to limit the existence of these types of vending machines only to a small area of the city. That attempt was again stricken by the court and found to be an invasion of the ability of the newspaper to exercise its constitutional rights. I do have some good news. There's a case out of Los Angeles, Cash Enterprises versus City of Los Angeles, where the court found that addition. Insofar as this requirement may be interpreted to pose an aesthetic standard distinct from the commonly accepted meaning of the term clean and neat, it exposes the news and owner to criminal sanction, etc. We do have the ability to control the condition in which these appliances are in, and perhaps even control their appearance. I also spoke with a city attorney for a nearby city who has recently experienced some misfortunate or unfortunate results in their attempt to control the existence of the racks. And again, the court's focus on the reasonableness of the regulation that is attempting to be controlled. However, aesthetics appear to be very much in the game. What I would recommend, I was looking for direction from council. The first step to this type of a conversation would be to engage all of the papers that do have these types of advertisement, and perhaps invite them to a meeting or get together to discuss the appearance of these items in the area where the work is being done. In other words, along Grand Avenue between, let's say, 5th and 11th, or along the project area, and see if there is some way of conforming them to the appearance of the remaining fixtures that are being planned for that area. We may also attempt to see if we can proceed with a ordinance that would perhaps preclude him from existing in that area. However, I would caution the council that that may be subject to attack, and it may not be defensible because Grand is the only area of commercial, arguably, activity in the city, and if we make attempts at precluding even portions of it from being available for exercise of free speech, we may be treading on thin ice.
I have a question. Can't we do anything about these racks who are accepting money, not giving you the paper, for one? I mean, doesn't the public have some kind of right? I mean, they're cheating the public by not having operating racks.
I think to the extent that those types of things occur, I think that the first area of grievance should be directed at the vendors.
So that's... And then why do they charge one price at one location and another price in another location?
Again, I really would not be able to answer that question without knowing more detail. Perhaps it's the cost of delivery. I don't know.
I can take you around right here in Grover, and there's two different prices and some that don't work.
If it's the wish of the council, we may amend or enact an ordinance that deals with some level of consistency in these types of things, and I think that we can look into that area if that is the direction that the council wishes to proceed.
Thank you. Councilmember Ekbom.
I remember, I think the lawsuit from the neighboring city was trying to restrict the number of rack inside of this.
Right. And I think that is a
box, yeah.
Right. That is a position that would be defensible.
Okay. And, that's my two questions. Do we control the location and the design?
Well, I don't want you to misunderstand controlling the location. In other words, we for example, couldn't say, okay, all the ones that are in front of the post office box, we don't want you there. You need to move to Ramona or Rockaway.
But
the way they are grouped.
Down,
right, the way they
down.
Are grouped in grouped that together. Location, yeah, I think that's something that's within our purview.
Because I agree with Mr. Donaldson. I think that's going to be a terrible blight on that downtown section we're working so hard to upgrade. Yeah. It seems to me there should be some standardization that we could do so that you don't have green racks, white racks, blue racks, old racks, right. Square ones, round ones, and, you know.
And again, I think compliance by agreement is probably the most effective way of accomplishing these types of things. So if it is the wish of the council and if that's the direction that the council would like to provide to staff, staff would certainly is in a position to enter into those kind of conversations with whoever's in control of those items.
Okay.
Can I speak?
Yes, sir. Mayor Pritchard Schultz.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I agree with Councilmember Arnoldson and Mr. Ekbom regarding the potential for blight, but I guess this isn't real high on my radar right now. To expend staff resources dealing with a First Amendment issue. We are going to be taking up the issue of visioning and the downtown corridor, and maybe if we can treat these type of facilities as street furniture or whatnot, we can do it all in a proper context. So I would, rather than sending staff off now, I would rather we do it through that process. That's where I am at this point.
Whatever, I mean.
That's fine. I don't.
As long as it's addressed, yeah.
And it's going to be like you said, furniture or something else.
Yeah.
So.
Fine.
Okay. Do you
Mayor,
have?
Yeah, just one comment. I know that both Councilmember Arnoldson and Councilmember Lieberman were had discussed the issue with me and had considerable concern or interest in it, and I don't know if. Since neither are here tonight, whether you would want to have us bring this item up or again sometime in the future or reserve the right for them to ask you to consider it again sometime in the future.
I think it's only right. You know, it was important to them, so maybe in the future we'd bring it back.
Allow them to broach the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. Moving on to item 15, selection of Grover Beach citizen appointments to participate in the Joint Council Workshop on Police Service Enhancements scheduled for April 22nd, 2004.
Honorable Mayor, members of City Council, as you know, the 22nd of April, the three cities will be getting together to discuss the three representatives of the bargaining groups. And from each community, two citizens. And it's up to each city to determine how you want to select the citizens. There are, for example, in Arroyo Grande, they have a police commission, and I think the concept there is a couple of members of the police commission would serve as their citizen representatives. Council has a number of alternatives. Off the top of our head, staff came up with inviting anybody who's interested in doing this to apply, put their names in a hat at some point in time and draw out two names, or put all of the business folks who may not be residents but who have businesses here in one hat and all residents in another hat, or say that we're interested in having a business representative and have the Chamber of Commerce provide somebody, and we're interested in having a citizen and maybe a member of one of the city's boards of commissions would be an alternative, or the council come up with folks that you would like to nominate, think would be representative of the city's interests or the community's interests, not the city organization per se, and select two of those folks. I think the mayor is aware, at least, and I don't know the rest of the council is aware, that Council Member Lieberman has a specific individual in mind that he would like to see selected. That individual happens to be sitting in the front row here, and it's not Jake. So, yeah, and it's not Steve. Man.
And not Steve.
That's why he got up out of the front row and
he's out of the room.
We're here to help you figure out how you might want to go about doing this, and it's really totally up to the council. We don't have any strong ideas or opinions one way or the other.
I sort of have to agree with Council Lieberman's thing, but and I also like to see somebody from the business community, which may be the person from the chamber, or I don't know, in the business district, somewhere in the business that happens to pay tax dollars and you know, has a business certificate, whether it be restaurant, construction, flower shop, anything, but or banking or
attorney.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I think I'd like to just nominate someone. I would agree with Councilman Lieberman's nomination of Mr. Nichols. And I was thinking about an individual who is a 15-plus year resident in this community who has a background in law enforcement, who is aware of the issues. And I would very much like to at least nominate them to get his resume in front.
A little disassociated with the police department. I think it should be a general citizen. So Mr. Nichols is great. I think that's one. Let's just take him before he declines. And then... I agree. It doesn't have to be a business person, but I think it should be that somebody that's not involved in any of our commissions, or it should be a lay citizen that would like to volunteer their time and have some citizen input other than somebody that's police reserve or somebody that's very closely associated with them.
Yeah, and the individual,
I don't know who you're
talking about. No, the individual I wasn't talking about does not have any association with this police department, and he was not involved in any of the prior discussions. So he is, in fact, a citizen in this community.
Well, I'll do it in a different take. Why don't we have a guy and a lady? Hey.
Can you? No.
Yes.
Fine.
Let's be equal. Right?
Well, let's just, you know, in order to be fair, let's just all nominate someone. If someone doesn't want to nominate them, that's fine. Let's give the city manager or staff the names. Let's get a resume, and I guess we don't have much time to pick that person is the problem.
Yes, theoretically, you could put the decision off until the council meeting of the 19th, assuming that whoever the nominated folks were in fact available to participate on the 22nd.
Okay.
There's no other way to select it other than the next meeting. How else could you do it?
Unless the council decides on a process that is basically completely objective, yes, that means the nominations should be in at the next meeting and then a vote by the council. Also, nothing prevents you today from nominating whoever you wish to nominate and voting on those nominations. I mean, that's also an acceptable process. Assuming those people, if you know whether or not those people, A, are willing to accept, and B, will be available on April 22nd.
I think that last point is an important one, that the council, if we recognize that the selection would formally take place on the 19th, that any names that are before the council at that point would be ones that you could say turn into me or Donna to be able to list on the agenda or list in a staff report for the 19th, and that the council member making that nomination would make sure that that person is interested and available to participate.
Very good.
Good. Nominate one.
What does that mean?
What's our rules here?
It sounds like an individual has been nominated by four council members so far.
I withdraw my nomination. We're going to go down this road. So he has been involved in a section of our community. He is a citizen who I can vouch for his ethics. Well, I'm just putting my, yeah. I'm feeling like this is like the Senate or the president, or I'm not calling myself the president, but making a nomination and he'll have to come in and defend himself. But I think in addition to being a long-term resident, he is familiar with law enforcement activities in various communities throughout the state. I think that is an added bonus.
What's his relationship with you? Yeah. Have they been chasing him all over the state?
No, he like many others, he moved up here to raise his family, and he actually had retired here. So he is a family man. So.
Okay. I think it's great if we all turn in some nominations with a little introductory or something. I don't know your gentleman, so it'd be just fun to read a little bit about him. And okay. Very brief. And
okay. So. You have that? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Reconsideration of local street improvement program funding policy.
Honorable Mayor, members of City Council, at the last council meeting, when we were discussing goals, we talked about the history of the annual allocation for local street improvements and how back in 98 or so the council came up with a policy of allocating $300,000 a year. And there's been some confusion about whether that was to be 100% general fund or from some combination of funding sources. There's an attachment in your staff report that I put together that has...
Can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
This is such a hot issue. Why don't we wait till the other guys are here?
Okay.
No, I'm just asking that.
That's fine.
It's everybody certainly has some strong opinions on this. And
that's fine.
And we just continue the same agenda item. The same
absolutely. I don't think we'd reach a decision on this tonight anyway, so no. I agree.
I think they would be upset or want some input, so they'd be trying to bring it back.
Thank you, Councilmember.
That's where they should have been here. I don't know where they are.
No. Yeah.
As the mayor told me earlier, that's sometimes the way it goes.
That's right.
No, I agree.
Unless I spring one on you, huh? Okay, public communications. Thank you for doing that, sir. Any member of the public may address the council not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot take any action on any items that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone who would like to speak?
You want to say anything about the news, the racks?
Yeah. Okay. Seeing nobody here, we'll move on to council communications. Councilmember Ekbom?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I wrote something, and I can't even read it.